Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Tuesday, June 20th, 2017. It is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a general discussion. We have just one recognized item on here is draft ordinance 2017-001. We have to see if that's probably not the appropriate number anymore. But let's jump into item number two, which is other business, until Ms. Schmelzer joins us. A couple of things I need to bring before the board. There was an invitation to the board to attend a meeting in Cape Junction. The gentleman, Dave, I didn't give his last name, two weeks ago, has invited us to attend, one of us, a meeting in Cape Junction regarding marijuana that he's organizing. It's at 6:30 on Monday night.
Next Monday?
I would think so. It's coming up in the next
Monday
26th. So I didn't know if that was something the board wanted to even participate in or whether or not we wanted to send somebody. It's a little interesting to me that it's being organized by a citizen. It's at the county building. It's being couched as a town hall, but it's not our town hall. And I'm not familiar with how it's organized or much about it. In fact, I don't even know the last name of the guy who's organizing it, so it seems a little odd.
The guy who's come to our last two.
Seems really nice, and I just don't know what his objective
is. Is that the guy that he's been to our the blonde haired guy with the Google?
He wants marijuana banned.
Well, I think it would be, in my estimation, and I wouldn't mind attending but only as a listening position.
I think that's what we'd want to express to him. If anybody attends.
I'm not going there to be your advocate or,
gee,
they're on our side or anything. I'm not picking a side on this thing. I just want to hear their side of
anything.
But I would probably go if you want to knock me in for that.
Sure.
Is that okay with you?
I'm gone the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
So the other one is I had a discussion with Moving Mountains. They're coming in, I believe, this Thursday to make kind of a revisit of their presentation they did probably last year about PR. And we've talked to this board about it a little bit. I don't remember.
No. So where it was by the time that we were involved was that they were no longer able to honor what they had offered last year.
Right. That's they got a huge contract over there.
They got busy doing something.
They were all booked up.
So they were going to do some assessment of our Facebook, try to help. They put that pamphlet together, but I wasn't able to give them feedback.
They had it subcontracted on that. Yeah, I told them, I said, we basically needed it done when I came to you, so that really wasn't a fair first start.
But haven't really heard anything since.
We've been communicating, and so what I'm going to provide for him with a little bit of feedback from you guys, fairly comprehensive, I hope, is the list of priorities that I see. I just did this on the plane, so it's pretty short and to the point about just an outline of our priorities about where he could kind of see us focusing as a board. And so that would be the low-hanging fruit that I see that we could help out with.
Do they have time now? Is that what they're
They've got the wrinkles worked out with their clients the first go around and stuff, and I'm feeling like they kind of integrate us over time. I don't need that much up.
My only concern would be needing to put out a RFP to other companies to try to put something out.
I don't think we actually have to do that, but I'll check with finance about how we can contract with something like that. There's not a lot of companies that do this.
I just want to make sure that we're
Because one of the things
not
I think Commissioner Morgan's talking is when we did the tourism.
Now, that's a substantially different size contract.
Right. But, I mean, when we did the tourism thing, it came back, you didn't go outside. You didn't go to Medford. There are other companies from Eugene, Salesforce. But then when you entertain and you pick somebody from Eugene, they come back and say, why didn't you pick somebody local?
City's.
It's kind of a double-edged sword there.
So. Yeah. There's a threshold for needing to go out on that, and this doesn't get to that threshold. We rarely do. City probably does on a routine basis need to do that in a very thorough way because they're talking about serious high dollar amounts.
Well, and I guess I'm going off of what we were looking at when they had their first three proposals. To me, the third one, I want our website upgraded. I want our website scratched and started over because I think it's so unuser-friendly.
But I disagree. I think we've made great progress, but I wouldn't say that there isn't room for improvement. Oh, going back to scratch.
You can't find anything on it. You don't know where to go. You can't find it. Everything's a download. It's not mobile friendly.
I don't know. I get on there and I can check the election results. I can do the stuff that I want to do pretty regularly. But let's explore the things that are shortcomings specifically and say, how can we fix whatever it is that you're looking for? You know, what are those top 10 things that people are looking for? Maybe I'm looking for the same thing, and that's the one thing that goes right. Everything else may not work very well at all, and that's what we need to look at. But I don't know what those things are, because the one thing I look for, it is there. But I'm not a typical user of the county.
What's your ideas on the style guide, Josephine County style guide?
Well, so NRECA had one of those, and it has to do with, like, the color scheme that you use this logo. You don't get to deviate from the three-color branding style thing. This is Josephine County when you look at a website. That's really key for people.
Like Pittsburgh Steelers on the side of a helmet. It doesn't say Pittsburgh Steelers. It doesn't have to.
Yeah. You know
those,
what it is.
Three diamonds are Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah. There's a palette that's adopted. It's real simple. It's not real long.
Okay,
you could probably fit it all on like a one page. This is the font we use. This is the size of the font or stuff like that. It just gives general guidance to the departments that this is what we're doing here. You don't get to go off the reservation
like
and make
that,
it like a...
The road department used to have all orange trucks. If you saw an orange truck, it was the state highway road department.
Yeah.
The railroad had orange vehicles with railroad.
It's just a branding element that keeps it consistent, and it's actually a real good thing to have when you're doing that. So that's one thing, and then the other one is that I also started a pretty comprehensive draft of what I'm calling the Josephine County Forest Practices Act, and I'm kind of modeling it after the Oregon State Forest Practices Act as a guiding principle of how we manage our Josephine County forest lands. So Dave and I will be putting, you know, finishing touches on something of a draft to come before you. I really think that that's an important guiding document for him to be codified in ordinance so that future boards or the public has a real understanding about what these timberlands are for in Josephine County. And delineating things like recreation is certainly a component we want to consider. But there's 580 acres just outside of the city limits on Elk Lane and Stringer Gap. We're probably never going to harvest trees out there because the trees that we're planting, the youth tree plant takes place out there. I don't want to get rid of that property, but it's in Dave's wheelhouse, and it's a real challenge for him. That would be where I would designate. That's where we're going to provide recreation out of our portfolio. So you kind of check that box.
Recreation doesn't get in the way of the actual what our forest land is for.
Right. But just saying that. And then looking to the future, I address stuff of hardwood compressed logs as a potential market for our hardwoods that come off of carbon sequestration and biomass. I talk about that. Aggregate and mineral resources, recreational opportunities, costs incurred for different things that are outside. All of those are taken into kind of consideration in here. And I'm not done. That's probably a pretty rough draft, but we're going to get together and kind of hash it out. So it's really, you know, comprehensive. This is what we're looking for.
Is there any aspect in there about fuels for saving our timber forest land, you know, going in and cleaning it up so that if a forest fire were to start or get away from somebody's backyard and it goes up through our forest land, then it isn't completely devastating?
There's a couple of elements of fire resiliency that it's talked about in here. It says roadside vegetation management is a priority. We're rolling that fuels loading element into the Community Wildfire Protection Plan so that our neighbors understand everybody in Josephine and Jackson County needs to maintain an adequate or reduced fuel load buffers between commercial timberlands and your federal land, whatever it is. They're requesting, you know, that you pay special attention to those kind of boundaries. And anything I don't think of, let's just write it down. We'll get it in there. I want it to be more of a comprehensive document that kind of helps out Dave and his future management and the next, his successor, and all of our successors. So anyway, that's in the queue, but let's get back to anything you guys have under other. And
out at the fairgrounds, the BMX track.
Julie.
The BMX track was supposed to be, first they wanted to avoid having to put in underground power and underground plumbing and all the other stuff. So the fairground said, well, you're just a temporary facility out there. And lo and behold, they go out there because they broke an irrigation pipe, you know, moving dirt around and whatnot. And Peggy looks over, and they're pouring footings and setting block underneath those structures as being permanent. And
they're required by city code to do that.
Well, I didn't know if it was the city that required them to do that or whatever. So,
but they should have been coordinating with the fairgrounds.
Exactly,
about that.
Because they're no longer temporary.
Yeah.
In nature, and so that is probably going to change a little of the dynamics according to the fairgrounds.
You can pull up those foundations, but I talked to Laura Glover about this 6 months ago.
So did I.
For you guys, yeah.
And she said, if you make it temporary so that they're not, you know, put them on blocks, not a foundation, just put them on blocks, you know, or piers or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you can lift them up with a forklift or a
move them
truss crane or whatever, put them on a low boy and haul them away.
Yeah.
But these things are seismic and bolted down and strapped and footings and...
They're to city code. That's what it is, I bet.
And...
Really ridiculous.
I don't know. I tried to call Don Carter, who was involved in the BMX, and he kind of spearheaded the, you know, hey, we got to go, just a BMX track. It doesn't need to be something fancy. Well, now it is into something fancy. And I'm not getting an answer back from Mr. Carter, so I'm going to fair board meetings tonight, and I'm sure that will be one of the subjects.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Peggy was quite concerned about it.
Well.
Does that make the county liable?
I don't know.
Liable for what?
Well, I'm just thinking, like, if the city comes back and says, hey, you didn't have a permit, we told you it could be temporary, and here this thing's permanent.
No, they wanted it permanent. They're only abiding by the city. They didn't want to do it that way. They didn't have it that way before at the other place for a decade. They were just on skids. They drug them over there in that other place.
Well, yeah, that's kind of a way, you know, when Carter says, what do I do? And I said, well, if it's temporary, you can pick it up and set it, you know, you're just on setting on blocks. You know, peers.
When I told Laura, I said, what could possibly happen that's going to be any better if it's on a pier as opposed to on those skids? An earthquake? A flood? I can't see how it's a positive thing to put those things on piers for anything, you know?
Yeah.
So it's certainly not the intent of why we signed a 3-year lease agreement with them. I mean, that's not a permanent... I don't want power going underneath there or water. That doesn't make any sense. It's not...
No.
Consistent with every other piece of infrastructure out there.
But that's probably just one of them, and you know there's many of them. There's just this no man's land between...
Well, Laura was telling me that it's state law, and I thought that seems really hard that there's not some exception in the building code for temporary structures. You see them all over the place.
Car lots have their little sales office up on piers and a set of steps going in there.
Have Mark check.
Hmm?
Have Mark check. I mean, if you're...
City should have it. Well, they've already done the piers, so they're complying with the city. And
they've got the footings are poured, and they're locked down. They've got rebar up in between them and grouted and pretty permanent to me.
Bunch of time and energy waste. Okay, so item number one is draft ordinance 2017-001 and... Ordinance amending the text of Josephine County Rural Land Development Code Ordinance 94-4, creating and adding new sections 72.020G, clarifying height and setback requirements, 72.060C, and 72.060D, clarifying accessory structure standards, 73.030C, prescribing composition of walls and fences, and 83.020.C, setting limits for grade and fill and amending the text of 75.060.E to restrict exterior lighting. So, Ms. Schmelzer, you want to lead us through how we got here?
Sure. I guess for the benefit of the new board members, when I started last year, I was tasked with coming up with some marijuana regulations for the rural residential areas. And when I got into it, I realized the rules really need to apply elsewhere as well, based on the complaints that we were having and just consistency requirements and public education factors and stuff. So I completed them in August, and then they went to the Planning Commission in late October, and the Planning Commission couldn't make a decision. They do this sometimes, and so they forward it to you with a recommendation of no recommendation. So the whole board was going to hold a hearing, and they thought, no, you know, by the time we have the first and second reading, it's going to be under the new board, so let's just hold off and let the new board discuss it. So the new board had a hearing in January, and then they had a continuance that first week in February. And at that time, it was decided that we would break all the amendments into groups, and we would send them forward in groups, and we just have never done anything with them after that. I think I'd sent them back in groups like the second week in February or something, and they just never went anywhere.
While you're on that subject is Legal and I have had the conversation about how these came forward, and let's not do it this way again. Going with a hearing puts us in a structured conversation about the text and how we want it to read before it goes to a formal hearing. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have that worked out because we didn't have a real solid recommendation from the Rural Planning Commission. And so working out the nuances of how we want these specifically to read and go in group is a challenge we should have worked out before even going forward for that first hearing. But I didn't really give it that kind of thought. We hadn't really talked about it. And having that conversation with Legal really clarified how we should be moving these forward. So I almost think as though we're not unfortunately going to start from scratch, because a lot of good work has been done. We've had a first hearing. We've gotten a lot of good input from the citizens. But basically that's what I think we're going to do is kind of talk about the specifics. They're not perfect yet. Mm-hmm. They're real close, but I don't want to schedule them for a first and second reading until we've had a really thorough review of all of these.
Does the Planning Commission do they ever jot down what their reservations are about? You said they made a decision not to make a decision, but what was holding them back? Was there some items and some aspects of that of the first draft that they didn't like that could be changed?
It had everything in it, including the marijuana stuff. And
so you're talking about the whole thing.
When we had they had this last year before us, the whole thing came to us in February,
right.
And
we said
take this portion out. The only portion that's trying to go forward is the portion we said move forward with. The other portion we haven't even dealt with yet.
Right.
This is just the fences, the lighting, the impervious pavements.
That segment. This is the first segment that we're going to take a look at.
Yeah, so in February, at that first meeting in February that the board had, they said break it into groups.
Right, yeah, I remember that.
And bring it forward to us in groups. Bring it forward for first and second reading in groups. And, hey, for these that are very specific to marijuana, let's just hold off until we have a committee on that.
And we find out what the results of the exploratory question are.
At that time, that hadn't been public, but that was probably in the back of some people's minds. Yeah.
It was in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
I didn't want to move forward with placing restrictions on RR focused on marijuana,
right,
when marijuana may very well be something we don't permit in RR zones entirely, but these ones are...
This was the simplest.
These are just across the board, no matter where they are.
Yeah.
Whether it's rural residential or industrial or commercial or wherever they're growing.
Right.
Just the accessory structures are listed to RR5 and below. Is everything else everything?
Yeah, and that's because I'll get into the accessory has some different rules. They're kind of based on size, and you exempt some farm structures.
Okay.
So at the current time.
I wrote down when I was reviewing this that every time we're reviewing the code, for me, there's two fundamental questions to ask. Why are we regulating this in the first place? And why is our regulation looking to be either clarified or in excess of state law? And so those are fundamentals to me of setbacks and different things. A lot of this stuff is provided for in state law, and I just want to make sure that we're looking at it through that lens first. Those two questions, if we're moving forward and we haven't asked or answered those questions, for me, they're fairly fundamental.
Well, let's do that. Let's ask those questions. Let's start with the first one and kind of go through them.
Okay.
So the first one, and I'm referring to the one that Pat put together, the one that says draft. So the first one is fence height. At the current time, the code doesn't describe how to measure fence height. And we had not proposed this. This was brought up by the board at the hearing. And I actually agree with you. We need a definition on how to measure fence height.
That was just height of fences, height of buildings?
This is just fence height. We do have something in there to measure buildings. We just don't have anything to measure fence height.
Okay.
So the definition I put in there is a common one you find in ordinances. Basically, what you're doing is you're measuring to the top of the panel and not the posts, because it's not uncommon to have the posts go above the panel, or maybe sometimes people make the posts longer to put planters on or something like that. So,
what if there's no panel on the fence? I'm thinking of a hog wire fence. The whole thing is wire.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's just, the
what would call non-site obscuring fences, like say if I'm on a hog wire fence.
Yeah.
Around my marijuana grow, does it have to be blacked out?
Okay. So as far as blacking out, let's go back a little bit. The county does not require fences for anything, unless it's something like a junkyard and we make it a condition of a permit or something.
Sure, that sounds reasonable.
We do not require fences. Originally, last year, OLCC did require solid fences. And the problem was, and we had complained about that. We said, you're putting a target on their back is what you're doing. And we had a lot of complaints about these because then people were using tarps for their solid fences. The issue we had...
Fire fencing? Like
tarps.
Yeah, but I mean, you said you call it fire fencing? What kind of fencing did you call
it? I didn't hear that.
I didn't hear fire.
Okay, I'm sorry.
For their fencing.
Okay.
So if the state said you had to have a solid fence, they were putting up tarps, And that's when the complaints really started coming in. The problem with the state requiring the fence, the solid fence, was they didn't check with other state agencies. So we had OLCC saying, you need a fence, and it has to be this high. And then you had the building safety side of the state law that says, oh, we regulate fences over this high, and they
seven
have to be
feet,
built
right?
This way. Yep, so there was this.
You have to get an engineering.
Yep, so we had the state telling everybody, go out and put up an 8-foot fence, and we had the building safety side of state law saying, wait a minute, if your fence is over 7 feet, you need permits, they have to be engineered, etc. So the state got a lot of complaints on them. They finally did away with the solid fence rule. Now what they have is they say you have to have a security plan and we just have to review the security plan. What that means is you can have solid fence or a chain link fence usually. In some cases, although it's pretty rare, they won't require any fence. For example, I was talking to a lady in the hall out there, and she has like 80 acres, and she's in the middle of the 80, and it's wooded. Something like that, the state's going to review and say, you don't have to have a fence. But to this day, they review that security plan, and they usually will still require some type of fencing. So what we did was we said, okay, well, let's make sure we don't, fencing aside from marijuana, let's just look at fencing altogether because we don't have fencing rules really. And what we saw were people taking all these root balls and piling them up and cars stacked. And we have one where they have washers and dryers all stacked up. And we said, this is one,
But we define the difference between, can we just define a fence as being posts and something in between it rather than a barrier? Because it sounds to me like when you pile up car bodies and appliances, it's a fence, a barrier,
so,
not a fence.
I want to go back to what Julie was saying first. If we start with the first one and work one at a time, because this, we're going to get all over the place. And the first item's height. Later we get into what it's made of. Later we get into other, if we're going to get through this without having the conversation go all over the place.
What's the state's purpose in a fence anyway? Is it for privacy? Is it for, I don't want
security.
Anybody to know there's marijuana there. I don't want kids looking and say, hey, daddy, what's that?
It's security.
There's it's a security. It's a, that's yes. Their purpose for the fence is security.
Yep. And it falls under their requirements for security plan. So. Okay.
But we specifically don't have anything in here that says marijuana other than indoor grow. Correct?
Well,
this was supposed to leave out the marijuana stuff.
Ish. There is some marijuana language in here, which we'll go through as we go through one by one.
Okay.
But let's just start with the fence height. So, okay, Sam, you had the question, what about a barbed wire fence and something like that?
The definition is not clear to me. I've been building fence my entire life. And so if you have a wire fence, there's no panels. If I put that Visqueen green stuff up, there's no panels. That didn't qualify above your panel suggestion, but now it does as far as a fence. I'm just looking at this as the fences that I build, I'm not getting permits for. Nobody's telling me that I can or cannot. I'm not going to get it engineered. I'm just going to put it up. You can find me and whatever. But that's the, you know, the hundreds of thousands of fences out there. What are we looking to regulate here and why?
Agricultural fences are exempt.
Okay.
So not by our code, but by, I believe it's in the state law.
I would imagine.
Yeah. I mean, because you can't go chasing cow fences. And why would you?
Right.
You know?
So my concern with that, marijuana, if it's being brought to our attention, never would have visited this had Measure 91 failed, as an agricultural commodity, are those fences exempt?
You know, and Pat, I'm not sure if you're familiar with those laws or not, but I think it talks about animal pasturing, and there's nothing about protecting crops. It talks about...
not like a vineyard or something? They have 8-foot fences that are securing, you know, vineyards and orchards that are pretty substantial.
Technically, that's a good question.
It certainly is, because of the fact that you are now singling marijuana out as a, yes, it's agricultural commodity, but it's the only commodity that is requiring the fence aspect of it.
A security plan. You don't have to have a security plan
But keep in mind, the state says that we can single marijuana out and treat it different than any other crop out there.
Okay.
Bingo.
Okay.
Just got it. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Let me know where that comes in.
The state...
You answered a question I've had for a long time.
The state said that we could treat marijuana completely different for time, place, and manner regulations.
Okay. So the height of the fence, I mean, I know we got on the fence topic not because we wanted to regulate... It was because we wanted to regulate what it was made out of. I think that just limiting it to the panels doesn't really, I don't agree with that. If you got a panel and you got stuff above it, that's still the height of the fence. To me, it's the bottom of whatever your structure is to the top of whatever your structure is your fence.
Yeah, but when you look at buildings, Lily, when you're measuring building height, there's always something that's exempt too. For instance, chimneys, spires, things of that nature are
often
exempt.
I think we need to get to the goal you were talking about, what it's made out of, and that's what we need to, we don't want it made out of cars and refrigerators or something, and wood wall.
And
so
that's,
let's just get to that.
Well, the height the only issue because the state required 8-foot, and now since it's not, we can scrap that section?
Well, I didn't propose anything on fence height. That was something
that we added.
You guys added.
So let's scrap it.
Okay.
Can we just refer to whatever, because as soon as we make something on height, and then the state decides to say, well, no, now it's 7 feet, then we're back changing all of us. They're trying. Can you just refer to state law?
Since we added it, do you care if we drop it? Okay. I say let's drop it since we added it.
Drop height?
Height.
Okay.
The whole of all of that, Article 72.
And?
Just 72.02G.
On height, do we say refer to state law?
Well, so the rural land development codes typically have a height definition. We don't. But I'm okay without it because, especially in our office, because we got the building safety side, which says, you know, planning may not describe the height of it, but building safety does have codes on how to measure things. So just refer to the state building code.
And that goes back to Simon's first question. Why are we being more restrictive than what the state has? If the state already has it defined, why don't we leave it undefined?
Well, because you guys asked for it.
Yeah. So now we're asking to scrap it, if you're in agreement.
Yeah.
Okay.
So okay, let's scrap it.
My All right. Now, you have to realize that meeting in February was our first hearing in office. And
that brings me back to, we need to have these kind of general discussions about it before we go
there.
And it just, we workshop it, and then we like, okay, we're really, and then it's defensible. Like, when people ask questions, well, we talked about it, and I can give you an answer.
Exactly. Yeah.
Over there, I was like, well, I don't know. You know, it's
well, another thing is, by the time we get there, it looks like we're undermining you, and that's not fair to your position.
Yeah.
I'd rather do
we
that.
We need to be in agreement here, and then it goes really well.
Well, there was a whole process in play before we were
absolutely
on board.
We took office, so.
Absolutely. And the direction I had was to not go to the board with it beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
okay, good.
So let's just move forward, okay?
We want to work these quirks out so that you have our support and vice versa going there.
And we as a county need that because the public is very frustrated. Okay, so let's move on to 72.060C and
so the way the fence height, let's just put that one to bed. Yeah, but it's only in our planning, not in building and safety. So what is there? We're relying on state law that says over 7 feet with the state's definition of how to measure a height requires a permit in engineering.
Well, when it comes to height, how to measure it, like the state law says you exempt, let's say you have a chain link fence and then you have that razor wire on top, state law would exempt the razor wire, which is what this was doing too. So
interesting.
We just refer to them because if they need a
permit. But the height is 7 feet or higher. Requires an engineer and a building and safety permit? All fences?
What it says is 7 feet and higher needs a permit. And there's some fences that are exempt. For example, like a regular chain link fence would be exempt. So planning, okay, let's go back. So planning would say if you have a solid fence, which is more than 50% site obscured, if you have that, which by the way isn't in our definition, I mean the code is really lacking critical definitions, okay?
So how are you arriving at that definition if it isn't in our code?
I'm going by professional definitions, what you typically would find in the planning world. There's
How is that defensible, Julie?
Well,
I think we need define it as be very clear on.
Yeah, so I have an ongoing list of all the changes that need to be done. And I'm going to be very frank with you. I don't know if we'll ever get to them because it takes so long to get anything moving here. But we have so many things wrong that need to be fixed.
But I don't understand how you're applying a general accepted definition without it being in our code. That isn't defensible. If somebody challenged you, you're going to lose. And I don't like applying something that the board hasn't endorsed as an element of an ordinance. That's really important to me.
It's important to me too, Simon. Okay. What happened in the past was, I could be wrong on this, but what I am seeing in the past, and Pat would know better than I, and Simon, you too, because you were here so long, but what I have found is the planning directors, rather than go through the whole legal process of doing an amendment, would make policies, and those policies then became office law, so to speak. So something like this that we're looking at today would be presented to the planners in the form of a policy. And that's how they circumvented the board and the whole legal process. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. We can't be doing that. There are gray areas where we have to make interpretations. There's also, and when we make those gray area interpretations, I want that to become an amendment. I want it very clear.
When are you ever checking in with a policy person of saying, yes, that's a defensible county policy? I hear this from time to time, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. That isn't my perspective. And I'm only one person on the board, but I've been here a little while. Our perspective is, frankly, the one that matters the most. As far as a policy, if you're going to apply an administrative element in it, that's really, I would like to know what those are and have those reviewed and say, yes, that one you need to be applying, or no, that is not. We're never going to go there. It's not even a chance to be an amendment. Even if you presented it, we would strike it down, and then you can't apply something like that. I don't know, it's really challenging.
We have a stack of policies from former directors.
Yeah.
Oh, this big. We need to get the, we need to look at them individually and say, should they be in the code or not? There's, we need a major code rewrite, but like I said, it's, I'm hesitant to keep stacking these up on you guys because, you know, we have all these marijuana ones. We have the public hearings officer. We have the DLCD ones coming up. We have...
That's why I think process is so important.
Yeah. And going back to saying, well, okay, if it's 50% side obscuring, I understand why you would need engineering if it's a solid panel fence because it's wind... You're talking wind shear now. You're talking where the wind blows over and those panels become a projectile. Whereas if you, the wind just blows through a chain link fence, it's no big deal. No engineering required, because I think that's what the purpose of the engineering requirement is. But we don't define that. We should be able, when somebody walks in, walks up to Simon on the street and says, what's your fence requirement? It shouldn't be, we should be very solid in a one-line answer for that person, not just say, and then when they say, well, then I'm going to put 4 feet of razor wire. Well, if you put the 4 feet of razor wire, you can have your post every 8 feet instead of 12 feet. That we need a real quick one-liner that we can, that's very defensible.
Well,
and right now we're not, because we're not consistent with state code, and our code is not, that the two aren't consistent. But we could just say, state requirement is this, and that's why it's the same here. We're okay with that.
Well, we are consistent with state code.
Okay, then just, then we'll just, whatever. I'd like to see what state code is. Does it have a thing about solid versus chain link?
It does have some language about, I don't think it says solid. It does, I'm not sure how it reads, but the problem is I don't, you know, we can always refer to that building safety code if we want, but I would feel better if what the planners are enforcing the rural land development code. I think it needs to be in the rural land development code. The definitions are our next group that we're supposed to review, so let's just put it in that, those definitions.
Okay. And if the, if the Rural Land Development Code states something, then are our inspectors and our building safety people going by the same code, or are they going out and saying, no, I want it this way because the county's more interested in this or that or this, and making up their own rules out in the field? Because I think that's where we're getting in trouble.
One of the beauties of having the departments combined is, in the past, they didn't talk. And since we've been combined, we have weekly meetings, and we are finding out so much stuff, you know, just by having the two sit there and talk. So when we talk about maybe we need to do this, building safety will say, yeah, but the code says this. And so we come up with something. We've been trying to come up with stuff that, that blends together. So, for example, there's some stuff that building safety says are structures. They need to be engineered. They need permits. It's stuff we would have never even thought about requiring a permit for, but state code is saying you do.
Yeah, that's so, what, see, this is what I'm, and I think we've kind of, we touched on it earlier in my career here, is that they come into planning and they get all their stuff for planning and then they get out there and start the job and here comes the inspector and says, you didn't get that engineered. He goes, I didn't see any reason to get it engineered. You know, I'm tying a roof into another roof. Well, that's all got to be engineered because we don't know if the load, if this is load bearing and so on. And he goes, nobody ever told me about that. So you've got the building safety inspector out there with a whole other set of requirements that this guy, if he'd have known that going in, maybe he'd have redesigned his garage or made it a standalone garage, not attached to the house.
Well, and there's, so the way it was, when they come to planning, we'd say, okay, you have to go up the stairs to building safety now. Some did, some didn't. Some say, oh, I didn't know. Maybe staff forgot to tell them. I don't know. The good thing is you can't get out of there without going to planning and building safety now because you're talking to this planner and then you go 10 feet to this desk. So, and we're like, you have to go over there and talk to them.
But I would like those two to be consistent, I think. In other words, at the planning stage, you just say, you know, well, this is what building safety is going to require of you.
We can't, okay? Because the only one that can do those, the building safety laws, is the building official or his staff. So, and Dan, we don't even want to go there. My staff is overwhelmed already. Now if I say, now you have to learn the building code, to give people advice on the building.
Well, I just want, like, this checklist. I want to make sure that the guy gets out of there and he has all of his stuff check all the boxes checked. He knows full well what the requirement from the county is going to be for his project, start to finish. But then when we go out there, he gets, you know, here comes the building and safety guy, and he goes, well, you can't do that. You got to tear that down. You got to move that door over here. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. And you go, wait a minute. Nobody ever told me any of this. Well, I'm telling you. And that's where we get in trouble as
it sounds like the guy never went to building safety in that case. Yeah, or he would have found that out.
So we need to break this up into achievable outcomes of things that we can get done, hopefully make progress today. So Julie, lead us through that.
Okay, so 72.060 accessory structure standards. What this came see is really about impervious surface. What happened is there was a concern that there was going to be overdevelopment on the real small lots. Now, by code, you can have a certain amount of square footage based on the size of your lot. But then there's also some stuff that gets put up that would exceed create overdevelopment. And that's what people were afraid of.
Why limit it to 2.5 acre lots? Wouldn't 50% development on a 186 acre lot? That's RR5 be a concern as well. Wouldn't that be deemed overdevelopment?
Boy, you're jogging my memory why we did the 2.5. I will say this on larger.
Because we thought we were only going to ban under 2.5 acres.
maybe. Maybe.
I heard, that was a rumor I heard in election cycle.
You know, it was something to do with the original code. When I went back and looked at the original code, 2.5 acres always seemed to be a cutoff point on, like, agriculture, like, building size and everything. So I'm like, okay, if we have to have a cutoff, where is it? Consistently, we had looked at 2.5 acres. So I think that's why I had picked that 2.5. But, this was to I'll go back here a second, I'm sorry. The code right now, and I don't have the code in front of me, it limits the size of buildings, but it didn't say whether that was cumulative, and it didn't say whether it was footprint or square footage. So this cleans it up to be very clear that when you're looking at the size of buildings, it's the cumulative of all the buildings, and it's the footprint, not the floor area. Differences.
What's the difference?
Square foot, if it was multiple stories.
Yes.
I don't care if it's 10 stories
high.
Okay.
Right.
We're looking at the density of the footprint.
Whatever it's covering on the ground itself.
So why are we regulating this? Is it regulated in state code?
I like the definition.
I don't think I mind that.
It's not in state code, but what it is it's addressing those fears of overcrowding.
Whose fears?
Public's fears. And it's also, there's some areas where we're having, and by the food bank is a good one. When you have too much development on a lot, what you have is runoff going and either flooding neighboring properties or you're creating... increasing water flow.
Don't we have regulations?
No.
Regarding, a development permit, carrying capacity. Those are elements that can be addressed in that, right?
We'd have to create rules on that. We don't right now. And again, this is one of those long-term things, and I've discussed this with the state, and I've discussed it with NRCS, because we are seeing flooding where we haven't seen flooding. Because what happens when you have all this runoff, you get sedimentation, which increases the water level, and then, of course, you have more water flowing. And what happens is I have found no one in Oregon, unless it's done by a county, regulates impervious surfaces to prevent damage downstream. The food bank is stuck with a hefty bill to repair some damage caused by development upstream. So what we need to... Eventually, we need to look at it as a county and start looking at watersheds. This is where I said to the state, I'm like, well, who's regulating the watersheds to make sure farmers aren't creating additional erosion and all this other stuff?
So that's the purpose of C.
The purpose of C is to limit overdevelopment and runoff.
Okay. So in other words, you're saying that if you don't exceed 50% of the lot area, you're okay. What 50% will absorb what the other 50% is
It'll absorb the
runoff
rain
from the other
50%. Yeah. Okay. This was one that when I ran it past the ad hoc group I had put together, and then when we had the public hearings, this is one that we didn't get any objections to.
Okay, I have a question. There's a grow out there in the Williams area that the guys put in 14 greenhouses.
Shadow box.
Is that what it's called?
Shadow box, yeah.
Yeah. 14 greenhouses out there. Did he cover more than 50% of the lot size?
It's not on rural RR5, correct? It's agricultural, which is exempt from all this.
That's the difference. It's on exclusive farmland.
He can cover the whole thing in a greenhouse minus the setback requirements.
We're very limited in what we can do to restrictions on agricultural lands due to the right to farm laws. So when it comes to exclusive farmland, which is where we want crops to be, right, it's kind of a hands-off approach because of state laws. It used to be you could not even address noise, odor, etc. on exclusive farm because of the right to farm law.
Then how did River Road Reserve be able to do nothing out of River Road Reserve?
I don't know what River Road Reserve.
That was when the city bought 250 acres of it.
They could. They are.
They can farm it?
They wanted, okay, the problem with River Road Reserve and the food bank is what they wanted to do was haul in stuff they got from donations and take it out there and process it.
Now, they weren't growing it.
What the state law says is you can't process more than 50% of stuff you don't grow on your own property. It's exclusive farming.
I'm not caring about food bank on that
side. Okay, on the other side.
I'm talking about on the other side. They wanted to put a park in there and said absolutely not.
Park is not allowed on exclusive farming.
No, you cannot take EFU out of production and set it aside for
a park. As long as it's production, it can be done anyway.
As long as it's farm.
Ag production.
Farm, then you can do anything you want on it.
Retail on a farm establishment?
Not really, yeah. But in general. we do have lots of restrictions on farmland. But generally, that land is set aside for farming, and there's right to farm laws that say you're not going to interfere with that farmer's operation.
Your neighbor can't interfere with that farmer's operation. I mean, there's real, that's a priority. It's a goal 5. I mean, it's delineated in Oregon state law, land use law, this is a priority. And agriculture production is in that one.
And that's the problem we have at Shadowbox is the neighbors want us to tell them to shut the fans off, and they don't like the odor, and they don't like the lights on the road and everything. And we're like, we can't touch that.
Nope.
But I will say this. So when I started all this, you know, I had consulted and was told you can't do anything with the odor or the noise. Last February, Rob the end of last summer, Rob Beauvais, who's the AOC attorney, said that in February of 16... the laws did change, and counties can regulate certain things, such as odor and noise, but it's very limited in how we can regulate them. So these were crafted on the advice I was given. Now, if we were doing this, now knowing what Rob Beauvais had told me, some of these might be different. So, but let's keep going. Okay, so that's...
I just, on that note, we're at County College this weekend in Yamhill County. So you get off in Salem to head over to McMinnville, and you're going through farmland the whole way. And you will see greenhouses or shadow boxes, whatever you want to call them, straight up to along the road with some setbacks with basically looks like about a driveway along the edges of it. And I was trying to look to see if there's gravel inside or outside, but there's gravel all the way around them. All the roads are graveled. And so everybody that's complaining that these properties are being clear cut and greenhouses are going up and there's gravel everywhere, that's how up north is, and that's all they do is farm.
There's gravel under all of those pots and stuff.
Yep.
To provide for drainage when you're working and stuff and when you're irrigating. Yep. So you're not walking around in mud.
So everyone who says they're destroying our farmland, no, it's not. That's where farmland.
Highest intensity ag production is in those greenhouses up there, and it's the leading agricultural commodity in the state.
So anyhow, don't like it, that's what ag does. So
that's
I do agree
go.
That having the fans going 24/7 without getting any sleep is frustrating. And I agree the lights shining so bright that you can see them 20 miles away. You know, I remember going to Vegas when I was a kid. because we have family there, not because I was gambling in Vegas when I was a kid. But 100 miles away, you could see the lights of Vegas in the desert. You know, it's just one of those things that Williams is turning into that.
That's well, why we regulate lighting in this.
That's why the density or the minimum lot size on EFU is as large as it is. And you don't have 5-acre EFU, ideally, the way the land use laws were set up. I remember growing up, and you can see the lights for the industrial for Rough and Ready. That's just the way it is, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's on industrial land, and you couldn't stop that. So I'm wondering, I have a scenario in my head. We have to be able to poke holes in these things from a standpoint of, like, what is the, you say 50% of the lot area. So I've got a friend who has, he's in the county. He's got a 2.5-acre lot. He's got a pond that's a 0.5 acre. He's got a driveway that's paved. He's got a little parking area, and then a 2,500 square foot home. If you take out the pond, he's over the 50% developable threshold, and that isn't providing for your runoff opportunity, because there's a riparian area and a pond and a stream. I'm just wondering, like, if we're
if it's runoff, wouldn't you count? If you're worried about runoff, you know, you put a building on there, that footprint, there's no runoff on there. What about his paved driveway?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
Is that a part of it or exempt?
Originally. And I can't remember if we still have that in here. So I'm used to impervious surface regulation to minimize runoff and mm-hmm. everything, and you count you compacted driveways, sidewalks.
So an aggregate driveway that's compacted?
That would be included in your impervious surface calculations.
Oh, wow.
Because water doesn't just go through it. You'll see it always ponding on there. It'll eventually go through, but usually if you have rain hitting that really hard, that's bouncing off into the grass, you know, or going off into the grass, because it can't just immediately absorb into it. So
cement driveways, they're considered footprint of the structure?
No. What I'm saying is, if we were regulating all impervious surfaces, we'd be looking at the driveways. This section is just looking at the buildings. So in Simon's example, his pond is part of his acreage, so we'd ignore the pond, really, and say, this is how much acreage you have, and now your buildings can only, so it's a 2.5-acre lot, so his buildings basically could exceed 1.25 acres, which is very generous. I mean, we went through on air photos, measuring stuff, and we didn't find anything that the 50% that this rule would negatively affect. Now, we didn't look at every single parcel out there. We were randomly picking small parcels in areas of higher development and calculating how many buildings, the size of their buildings versus the acreage.
So when you've got the 50% requirement and you've run that through planning, and then building safety goes out there and says, wait a minute here.
They don't have a code on that.
You've got a whole cement apron and a cement driveway. You're in violation of 50%. You're done. We have consistency there.
Yeah, one, they wouldn't even look at that. And the other one is we're only looking at the building. So we wouldn't be looking at the apron or if there's a big patio in front or something, like, for purposes of this rule.
Is this defined somewhere, lot area? Do you mean the entire acreage? Do you mean the
acreage? We do have it. I think it is defined in the code.
So with your example of driveway, compacted driveway being considered impervious, state law doesn't regard it that way. I know city ordinances are not. So that the parking lot that they did up there at the Siskiyou Clinic is done with a new kind of asphalt that is...
Water goes right through it.
That's what RCC has to.
So they're doing that to preempt the... Waters of the U.S. law
storm
that's coming down that says you have to treat all water before, all runoff before it goes. And so they're not going to consider a driveway, even if it's compacted, as being impervious. It'll be the same as the asphalt, that it does have pooling ability sometimes if it's raining really hard, but it's considered a permeable surface and treated and not requiring treatment. And so I think you're going to get into some challenges where I'll treat the stormwater runoff on a aggregate driveway. There really isn't any that's coming from that driveway that's going to be requiring treatment. And so I just keeping consistent with, like, city codes, federal law.
But keep in mind, this doesn't have anything to do with that. This is just saying we're going to look at the size of your buildings.
I thought you said you were counting driveways and compacted aggregate.
What I was saying for purposes of this, it's just buildings and lot area. What I was saying is, in a perfect world, we would have rules, really strict rules on that for the entire county.
So originally it did include that, but now it doesn't.
Originally, there is a section on impervious surface somewhere. I don't think we have it in this group, though.
So what were the concerns again about overdevelopment? Or were people just paving stuff and then putting things on, or just building big buildings on our zones?
Just real quick, Simon, I originally did have impervious surface regulations, and it was changed to just be regulating buildings.
Okay,
so we took the surface section out of it.
Yeah, we're not ready for that in Josephine County. And there's concerns as Simon.
So what about... It'd have to be a rather large building, right? Isn't it?
Or multiple buildings. It's cumulative.
So an acre is 43,560 square feet?
Yeah, but this applies to everybody. I know car guys that will build a 4,000 square foot house, and they build a 12,000 square foot shop.
Well, you guys...
For their cars. And now you're well over an acre and a half.
Well, we already have, keep in mind...
That's a half an acre.
Keep in mind, we already have rules that say you cannot have more than X amount of square... you cannot have X amount of building on these properties. We already have that, right? What this is saying is it's defining that we're looking at footprint, not floor area, and we're looking at cumulative because that word was missing in the original.
Okay, is a greenhouse considered a structure?
Yes.
Okay, so in other words, we're on R5, or we're on a 2.5 acre
That's
lot,
what it's doing.
And they can't
it's
have more than an acre and a quarter in their house, barn, garage, and greenhouses.
Yeah, what they're doing, so people get all the buildings they want, and then what we've seen is then they put up all these greenhouses out there. And, you know, the public started screaming about it. And it is overdevelopment in a residential area. When you're looking at planning and the intent, this is supposed to be rural residential. I mean, I don't think they should be looking like industrial areas. And we do, the code already limits the size. So what this really is doing is saying on these real small lots, it's making very clear that, okay, the code's going to allow you so much, but if it's more than 50% of your lot area, you're not going to get it.
How does this help the guy that's got 2.5 acres or 5 acres out there, and then his neighbor comes along and puts all these greenhouses? Are greenhouses allowed in a residential area?
Yes, a greenhouse, but if it covers 50%,
right,
that's
I get the 50%, but I mean, even an acre and a half of greenhouses isn't.
He would not be able to do it because the code currently. All right, let's go back a little bit. Before I got here, staff was just issuing these permits like crazy. They weren't even thinking about anything. When you see all these greenhouses on these residential lots, that's the way it was going. And I told them you have to look at the intent of the zone. You have to look at the intent. These are intended to be residential.
Residential.
The primary use should not be greenhouses if the purpose is residential. You know, so they're looking at things differently now. So we do have those examples where lots are covered with greenhouses. Those are also the ones where we got major complaints on.
Right.
You know.
So going to Jackson County, because Jackson County banned commercial growing on our
It was already restricted in Jackson County's code. Commercial agriculture was not allowed.
Is there a reason we don't look at banning commercial agriculture on R5 in our county?
We're gonna regulate time, place, and matter on marijuana. I don't think we have a problem with commercial agriculture. I'd never heard a complaint in my entire life, whether I was in this position or not, commercial agriculture and RR zones. We have heard complaints about, and there's 21 licensed OLCC permits on RR zones in Josephine County, and that's the one we're looking to, you know, lead into a restriction that was... that question, 1781. So,
well, there's one that
popped that'll
up.
Take care of that.
I'll take Witcher. Charlotte Witcher. She is surrounded on residential property, 5 acre parcels. She's surrounded by commercial growth or medical growth. don't know what kind of grows there. Grows or grow to her.
Mm-hmm. I know.
So when we say we don't get any complaints about people putting a commercial or medical grow on residential land,
we
get a ton of them.
Yeah.
And that's the ones I want to point a finger at. How do we fix that?
You know, I did send an email to Wally quite a while ago asking about the commercial agriculture, and I'm not sure if he ever had time to look at that yet, but we could change our, you know, wherever the state says wherever you allow agriculture, you have to allow marijuana. We could change our code to just say, just not address agriculture and just in the agricultural zone say we allow commercial agriculture. Commercial agriculture is when you're exchanging for money or goods or services.
I think no commercial operation should be allowed on residential property without having to get business permitting through you guys, home occupation business.
Yeah,
I don't care what it is. Any residential property should go through a special process to be able to do a business on residential. Because it is specifically zoned residential to protect that from happening. And every other industry is required to get a home occupation permit. Why do we allow others not to?
So coming back to this, I think we're going to move forward on the prohibition of commercial or OLCC-regulated marijuana grows from RR zones in all of Josephine County. I think we should do that.
How do you, the ones that are already there, that's going to be grandfathered in.
Not in my opinion, no.
So the ones that are there, they bought the land because now they're going to grow pot on it. You can't do that anymore.
No.
You have the National Guard ready to enforce that?
This is...
OLCC will not give them... We won't permit their land use compatibility statement. They need to come and get that. You just won't be able to get it on our zones.
And you're talking people, Simon, that have been Chairman, that have been breaking the law since time began. And you try to pack all these laws. I don't care.
OLCC won't give them a license. They won't be able to sell their stuff. So,
well, if they lose their licensing, then RAID and the other agencies can enforce it. They can't enforce it right now. They're permitted.
I think it'll work itself out. I think people will move into those areas that is more conducive.
The reason we have a bunch of ton of them in Josephine County is because Jackson County restricts them.
Right.
Those growers packed up over there and moved over here and bought all of our stuff.
It's only 21 lots. You know, there's several thousand grows.
Recreational.
I know.
Yeah.
It's about a third.
I need to grab some.
So my challenge is that we've spent 15 minutes on 72.060 without it really affecting any positive change.
Well, what it
is what I heard. You didn't have an example of where this would have
mitigated
some challenges.
Well, it does for staff because it clarifies you're looking at footprint. Again, if we don't want to be making decisions on our own, it clarifies you're looking at footprint, not floor area, because right now the code is silent on that. And you're looking at the cumulative footprint.
That's fine. I like
that. Of buildings, and it's
that.
Very... Okay. The next one is lighting. Lighting is the one we have... Lighting and fences are the two big ones, okay? So what this says is all indoor lighting associated with an indoor marijuana growing area or other accessory buildings, okay, so it's not just marijuana, shall not be visible from dwellings on adjacent properties between dusk and dawn.
Okay, I'm... When we had the brimstone thing over there, Fish and Wildlife was there, and they were talking about every little pebble and rock that might be an exposed agate or something. But yet, where's Fish and Wildlife on this? Where's the National Fish and Wildlife with the fact that when you have lighting 24/7, you are absolutely destroying habitat for nocturnal animals by the bunches? And where's Fish and Wildlife? That's a federal agency that should be stepping in here on this lighting issue and stopping it. It should be a federal problem.
Well, some of that stuff they leave up to local jurisdictions. Yeah, it'd be nice if they would regulate it nationally, but they haven't, you know. So this is one I think if we want to see something done with it, we have to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not against doing this at this point in time. But when you do need teeth and they say, well, you know, you can't do anything about it, you say, you know what, we'll bring the feds in here. And they will shut it down because, you know, like I said, that guy...
The challenge is, Dan, Commissioner DeYoung, is that you go to all of these homes, they all have one of these lights out of their barn, out in front of their driveways, I mean, there's lights in rural
Oregon. But that's not what they're talking about here, where it lights up the night sky 24/7.
My next door neighbor's looks like the daytime right now, and he doesn't grow marijuana. So he has a light coming out of his living room, his pantry, his barn has one, his parking area has one. I mean, it's like the daytime.
So the lighting on parking areas we'll get to later on in here, okay? So this is just looking at buildings, and I just want to remind you this will exempt the farm buildings, because farm building on a farm, those are not accessory, they're primary.
Right? What's
so,
the point
so a barn...
this is RR.
I mean, for those greenhouses that are running lights all night long and it's you can't see the stars anymore.
Well, because... I don't care, because there's also that caveat in here that says with an indoor marijuana growing area. It doesn't define the zone.
Okay.
And then it's other accessory buildings. So on residential...
Oh, I'm good.
Okay.
Should we start out D with the same thing we started out in C in the RR1,
R2.5? No, you don't want to limit. You want it on the farmlands to be...
Shadow box.
Can
complaints
you,
begin on
can
shadow
you
box.
Do this?
Yes. We
okay,
can.
You're right.
You can?
Because of
I thought you said you couldn't treat marijuana different than other agricultural
you
commodities.
Can
we
on
can
farmland, on
for time, place, manner.
How can you do that on EFU when you just tell me that noise, lighting,
right,
dust,
okay,
smells, everything on farmland?
Because they said you used to not be able to, but now you can because you can treat it different.
So you have general agriculture, the guy out with the dairy farm, leave him alone. But the state of Oregon said... But that's marijuana. You can do some regulations on it affecting time, place, or manner.
Okay.
And then they later came back and said, and we'll let you do some regulations on odor and noise too. So this one is just saying, when it comes to marijuana, if you got an indoor grow, we don't want to see it at night.
And we have state law that backed up.
That we can do it, yeah.
That we can have D.
Yes, because it is a time and manner regulation.
Okay.
Just from dusk to dawn.
Yeah. And we can switch that, but, you know, and just real quick on this, too. Somebody had told me that the state had rules on lighting. I've never heard of them, and I went through, this is the most recent set here. There's nothing in here about lighting. So I don't know where they were getting that, or if somebody, it could have just been hearsay from someone. But.
Well, and I printed 1057. Because this is the new one that passed that has all the new regulations, so I was just kind of curious if I could scan through and see anything that was helpful. But quite
have you
frankly,
read that?
I have
this reviewed 1057. Is that what that is?
These are the marijuana rules. Those
these are the
1057
new
just passed 2 weeks ago.
Those are not in here yet. Is it on there, Lily? The lighting?
I haven't made it through it yet. It's 38 pages long.
Yeah. Okay, so let's keep going. So is lighting okay?
I'm even okay just saying midnight to 6 a.m., you know, or something like that. The dusk to dawn is...
Okay, I did have different hours on there, and the board changed it from dusk to dawn at the end of that hearing.
Yeah. All right, then I'll leave her be.
So can I ask a question? It says all indoor lighting associated with indoor marijuana growing area or other accessory buildings.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either. The other accessory buildings, I'm not sure.
Is that outside lighting?
Okay, so with other accessory buildings, what that means is if you have a workshop, your garage, etc., on rural residential lands or other accessory buildings, the light has to be done from dusk to dawn, too.
Not associated with marijuana.
Right.
But that's just indoor lighting.
Yes. We'll get to outdoor lighting later.
So I can't leave my garage door open and work in there after dusk.
You have to pull your lights
on all
or something.
That's why
zones?
That's why I don't remember dusk to dawn, but to me I know it's because wintertime the lighting is different than in the summertime. But
originally I had hours in there that were consistent with other things that we regulate lighting on or hours on. And I can't remember who brought it up, at my venue Lily talked about dusk to dawn or 7 o'clock in summer is completely different than 7 o'clock in winter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it was changed to dusk to dawn. We can change it back. It doesn't matter. But
there are things in our code that reference sundown, sunup.
Yeah.
And that's a specific time if you wanted to change it from sunup to sundown. But it's totally different, 7 p.m. in the wintertime as opposed to 7 p.m. in the summer. Needs to move with the seasons. Because these people are going to be growing four seasons.
Yeah. And so dusk to dawn does make sense, unless you want to say sundown, sunup.
That's a more definitive time. I can look up and say the sun is going to go down at 9:36 tonight, and it'll be 9:37 tomorrow.
And what's dusk? Is it that little midpoint between...
There's a margin of error in dusk and dawn.
It's not when it's complete dark yet.
And what this also base, I think those new RLCD rules use the terms dusk to dawn too. So.
I think there's something in there. Sunset's at 8:54 tonight.
Which new rules use that?
So we got that, we did that contract with the LCD to update our Farnivore zones.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other part, and you have to be aware, is that other accessory buildings. That's in there because people complained and they said, why do we have to shut our lights off and he doesn't have to shut his lights off? Mm-hmm. I will say this, we had no objections to this, but I'm not quite sure everybody understood what they were getting into when you say other accessory buildings.
I'm okay with striking that. I just don't see that that's going to be...
What if you had a... it wouldn't be... this is not just rural residential.
No,
right?
It's every zone.
What about a...
processor?
Cow, like a dairy.
Yeah.
Well, they're exempt.
Because
it's not marijuana and it's farm.
No.
Well, no, this says other accessory buildings.
Because
ag
farming is the main use, so the barn becomes the main structure.
But that's
so
primary, that's not accessory.
Okay. On a farm, an accessory building would be your private garage.
Okay, so we're going to take out accessory buildings?
Yes. Well,
I just don't think it's relevant to what we're really trying to... I really want to, everything
I think
we do,
you're gonna have people taking the other,
we almost
want
to write down the goal of, like, what are we trying to do? We've got these greenhouses, and they're lighting up the night sky.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to regulate. I'm always focused on that.
And if you throw other accessory buildings in there, now the guy with the marijuana is saying, well, I can see his garage from here.
Right.
And so he's filing. Right.
What do we want to do with processing facilities?
They need to fall under this, too.
Okay, so we should say indoor marijuana growing areas and processing areas.
But not on industrial land. They can go 24 hours a day and light up the night sky just like a timber operation.
Can processing go just strictly in industrial? Can you say that processing needs to go in?
There's a certain amount of ag processing that's allowed on. It's an outright permitted use to process on ag, isn't it?
No, it has, you have to process a certain amount of the crop. There's some very specific...
If it came off of your property...
Yeah, you can process it.
Yeah.
But we as a county allow processing in almost every zone.
Well, not RR.
Correct. That's, I think, like, I think there's like two
all
that
resource.
We don't.
All resource zones. Which makes sense. I mean, people log 24 hours a day.
Did you put it down there in growing area?
I baled hay at 2 o'clock
buildings,
in the morning.
Or buildings associated with processing?
How would
the humidity,
I work on that? I know we do have it on the agenda
ideal,
Thursday,
right,
I think,
when the sun's
to come back
going
and
down
discuss.
Until about the
no,
dew starts to settle out. It's the perfect time to bale.
Makes sense.
I think you're right on the processing thing. Processing buildings associated
well,
with
I mean, I, yeah, I have not if we need it.
Well, if you can regulate marijuana lights... You can regulate processing.
Marijuana
well,
processing.
See, I thought we were going to... I mean, we...
Buildings associated
like
with
not
processing.
Stay with that anyway.
Stay with
okay.
What?
With the timeline of getting the first and second reading on this.
I'm not worried about that.
Okay, so I'll do something on that processing part. Make sure we're not addressing industrial. Okay, so let's go on to C1 for composition. Site obscuring fences and retaining walls shall be finished in a muted earth tone that blends with the surrounding natural
where
landscape.
Are you on this?
We continue
two?
To see one.
Okay.
Okay.
This one here?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm jogging my memory because I know that we had a discussion about taking that off, and I think the decision was to leave it in. But I think we need to talk about that again. So it's basically saying you can't have a hot pink fence or a bright blue fence.
I think you need to define what we think a fence is.
It goes on to do that in 3 and 4. And 2.
Okay, so I'll make sure we have a definition of fence.
I think it talks about that.
What's that?
I think number 3 and 4 talks about that.
Yeah, and 2.
Okay.
Mr. Meltzer, I think you're good.
You have them in there.
So don't define fence?
It's okay. Done.
Okay.
3 and 4 seems to be clear on that.
So number 2, so is there a question on requiring it to be muted earth tone?
There should be. I mean, let's talk about that.
We did an ad nauseum in February.
What's a muted earth tone? Brown, green?
Yep.
But muted meaning not?
Just not bright.
Because it's not our quote, I referred to the Webster's Dictionary. And I actually had that. I don't have the whole file here, obviously. What it means is a subdued... Subdued with red pigment, I think. In general, very basic. It might even be in the definitions that we've come for.
Don't buildings on the
coast?
No, on the river. Don't they?
Yeah,
they,
BLM has some phraseology.
Because a lot of people don't like that. They don't want to be told the color they can put there.
Well, what plants they can plant and stuff like that.
Yeah. For the most part, we don't have a big problem with this. There are some out there. But what we're trying to do is prevent the problems from coming forward. You know, if we had rules in place a year ago, we wouldn't be dealing with 3/4 of what we're dealing with today in our office.
Well, I had a couple calls last week about people just buying 5 acres next to them, and they get in there with a cat and clear it off, and they're pushing all the trees over and everything, and they're putting them right along the property line because that's going to be their fence.
And you wouldn't be able to do that. You would not be able to do that under number 2. Okay, but before we go on to 2, let's...
So do people just call in and say, okay, this is happening next door to me, and then we send a team out there to tell the guy, no, you can't do that. You're going to have to clean all that mess up and get rid of those rip balls and the fence.
I can't right now.
You can't. That's what I mean. There's no enforcement.
But
no, I can't because it's not a rule.
Okay.
There's no rule that says they can't do that. So I need a rule that says they can't do that.
All right.
And then I can tell them to get rid of it.
I don't have an example of where that wouldn't work, but out in Murphy, there's a fence that's black, which I would consider an earth tone. That's a really tough definition, and I think we can do
black's
better.
Black's not an earth tone. Brown, green, are earth tones. Brick,
tan.
Color.
I disagree. Prove me wrong.
Well, let's make sure we have that in the definition. I'm not
black
sure, like I said,
like
I don't have the definitions
me.
Here.
The muted earth tone, what the...
Muted earth tones or browns?
Your definition. I'll get you a definition tomorrow. It says state legislature passes earth tones is black. You can do that before the end of the session.
Black's not a color.
Black's a combination of all colors.
I know.
All right. Well, we're going to get a definition on that and revisit it.
That's what I would say.
Part of the issue was that black fence with all the pink all over it out next to the nursery was an issue. People were complaining
about
it.
There were whales painted on it and stuff, really pretty. I thought it was nice.
An art project. But what about where we say that?
I don't know about
the surrounding natural
over-regulation on stuff like this. It's just, I get not wanting to live next to a pink fence.
I know what that means, but
well, when we had the hearing, it was trying to keep it from being every piece of junk board you'd ever come up with.
So let's define it that way. Let's not.
You know what? Should we just scrap that?
No, I want to get it right.
There's got to be a way we can word it. I think we all understand what the intent of this is.
Okay. Well, we'll keep working on that.
But I see where you're saying, what's the definition of earth tone?
Well, and I've got a very good example of a fence that a guy put up, and it is black because of the stain that he used. It's black.
My wood on my fence has turned a grayish black. It's not black, but it's gray.
Probably getting there.
So what we do
redwood naturally turns like a blackish.
Maybe we go the other way and restrict no bright colors.
Define bright.
So just so you guys know, when it's not defined in our code, we go to Webster's. And if it's not in Webster's, then we go to like some of these law library definitions that you can find out there, or planning definitions from APA.
Should be really clear.
Okay, so we're going to work a little bit on that.
We can actually do some research too.
Yeah.
When you say law library, we can search case law. We can find
out. I think it's really
when that's been used before,
the direction
like
that
problems.
You were thinking,
sure.
Commissioner Morgan,
or that's a good idea.
Good.
Commissioner DeYoung, of going. Let's restrict bright. Let's not define
what
you can do.
Can't,
let's define what you can't do.
Well, and what about someone who wants a white picket fence? Is that considered bright?
I don't know.
I
need to look at this one, I think.
I guess for me...
Okay, so Pat and I will come back with something on that.
Yeah.
I just...
District downtown, and they put the rules on there what colors can be.
Yeah.
That was the big bone of contention, because all of a sudden we got that's what I want to paint my building, and I'm not allowed to. Tell me why. And then, it was case by case by case, not any kind of generalities. And you thought, these are the acceptable colors. Bingo. And they had a chart. These are the acceptable colors.
And I can see that downtown and Grants Pass,
exactly.
Where people sign up with that.
Exactly.
But
I mean, all
this
the
is
trouble that they had with the downtown, they're going to have the same thing out in the county.
If we go to it, may eliminate a lot of these problems too, because remember, then you're not going to be allowing plastics or tarps and things like that.
Yeah.
And I guess if you have a wooden fence and you want to...
Do you care about colors?
The gallery and Zay Drive is all green.
Do you care if it's
along
pink?
Along the side of the road.
I don't care what color a fence is. If somebody wants to paint their fence...
Yeah, it's just... Like I said, there's just those few bad ones that we've gotten the complaints on. And I can't.
But were they wood
right
fences?
I'm a private property right advocate. I think
can you?
I don't want to live next to a pink fence.
But
where do we draw the line? I don't want a tarp fence. That doesn't seem reasonable, and I shouldn't have to live next to that.
A what?
A tarp.
Yeah, I'd much.
That's not appropriate.
That's environmentally dangerous. I don't like the wood fences because it's keeping habitat from going through. Mm-hmm. But
doesn't Jackson County have something in their code about that it has to all be wood? This is somebody told me. I haven't looked.
Well, I'm not sure, but if they do, they might run into a problem with OLCC because OLCC now allows the chain link.
Yeah, true.
Well, we have those metal.
Can we make a suggestion in here?
Yeah.
That bright colors should be avoided. Please do, make all steps to avoid bright colors.
Not in a code.
Only say pretty, please. Just kidding.
I would love to see a CCNR that comes out that requires only, you could have like a complex of 5, 10, 20 houses that require bright colors. We're all going to be happy, cheery people. You know what I mean? And then so you'd have a CCNR that's in conflict. Only this spectrum of the, they could do that. CCNRs are really
my
specific.
Grandma's housing unit is pink is one of the colors that they use as a trim. And it's just
I know that like Lake of the Woods and all those cabins are owned by the U.S. Forest Service,
right?
And they do dictate what colors those cabins are. So if you look at and they're earth tone. I know there's an earth tone.
Well, by using what the Forest Service and BLM.
That's very defensible, isn't it?
No,
to the public.
Yeah. We don't want
to
be them.
That's my point.
Josephine County does not like those kinds of restrictions.
I know.
If I remember correctly, when this came before us in February, it was trying to avoid the piecemealed fences that every board's a different color.
We do have those. They're taking all the scrap wood they can find. They're putting together a fence.
But that wouldn't qualify if they weren't painting them. They're all earth tones.
Yeah.
They're just varying different degrees of. There's that one fence on Hubbard that the guy's been putting up for 2 years, and it's when he gets scrap stuff, and it is it's real wood.
But
they're not uniform boards. It looks shoddy.
That's art.
It actually has an artistic element to it.
Somewhere.
The fences of Josephine County. Actually, that'd probably be good a good coffee table book.
I was gonna say, there you go.
Bridges of Madison, fences of Josephine.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at that. She no longer works for us because she's going to retire on her coffee royalties.
Okay, so...
Making a note right now.
So Pat and I will work on that one.
I'm okay just taking color out.
Yeah.
About taking what out?
Color.
Finish in muted.
If you can figure out a
there
way...
Isn't there a muted earth tone.
Why don't we take the first sentence out?
Say it obscure and fences.
Or the whole in section one.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Delete one. Okay, you just saved me some work. Okay, so on number
one.
Define
color. Do you care if there's color?
Yeah.
Dan?
I think one of the things, the big problem is color, but if there's no way to come to any consensus.
Without seeming like you're over-regulating things like that. Because people don't like that.
Okay, so when we look at two... again, it's just trying to get rid of the tarp fences, stack cars, washers, dryers, the rubber.
That's pretty straightforward.
Simon, we were on number two.
Uh-huh.
And Dan said it was pretty straightforward.
Is green agricultural sheeting a lot? Because there's a really nice fence along 199 that's posts with green cloth as the only barrier.
So,
do you know how high that fence is? Because it's probably a violation of state building code. That's the other thing. Most of these fences violate state building code because you can't have...
I did not go on the property and measure it, but it's see-through. It's that mesh green cloth, and each of them is attached to the post. So the posts are the only permanent structure. And the green is tightly wound around the fence, and it actually looks sharp.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And that's...
Now your drive has a green tarp all the way along the side of it out there by...
Is it a tarp?
Cowart.
Plastic
tarp? It's like
tarp?
That permeable
it's
sunscreen.
Kind of it's like a netting or something.
Yeah.
Okay,
like.
That's... See, I don't consider that a tarp. I consider that differently, but I'm wondering how that fits into that shade cloth.
It looks pretty good.
Number four.
Well, that shade cloth, ignore what says on number four. We'll talk about that.
And numbers, and also where it says et cetera, I think that can leave things open to
interpretation.
I don't like et cetera either, but I am curious about the that fence. In my opinion, is cleaner than a lot of other fences we would have.
It looks sharp,
and
I think they did a good job.
Yeah, the only issue would be.
You're talking about the one out on the Applegate. There's one out towards there, but there's probably others.
It's on 199. I was driving back and forth to Cave Junction,
yeah,
and I saw it.
I've seen that one too. Mine is the berm. So we've required that next to aggregate operations as a sound barrier. And I think we could probably do that same thing next to processing facilities. So it's there's an access road of an aggregate operation, a haul route. Do you remember they were utilizing the same driveway and they had to put in their own driveway? This was about 4 or 5 years ago. It had to be landscaped, it had to be irrigated, and it was a permanent structure because it's a permanent aggregate operation. It'll be there for 20, 30 years, but it kind of provides that sound and visual barrier to the neighborhood, which I thought was a really good thing. And they were totally in favor of putting it on. All they do is move earth, so it was no big deal. They remove the overburden, and actually it's part of their reclamation plan to provide that. It's a constant requirement. You go up and down I-5, all those aggregate operations, they take the overburden and make that into the berm that's a site obstruction and sound barrier, and then they utilize that in their reclamation plan.
I just saw it in Clackamas. I was coming into, because I was driving from McMinnville over to Malala, and I had it took me through the north end, Newburgh, over to Donald Aurora, up to Canby, and then down. And I turned on this road, and it was an industrial property, but it had this landscape berm behind it, and that's exactly what it was, a sight and sound barrier. And it looked sharp.
Mm-hmm.
But it was intentional.
Yeah.
DEQ made them put a berm around the drag strip in Medford. On number two, can you put appliances in there?
Good call.
Because you have vehicles or equipment, plastic sheeting, and tarps, etc., but it doesn't have appliances.
So take out berms and add appliances.
No, let's leave berms in there, though.
Okay.
Why don't we just say, unless authorized by a condition of a permit, permanent or temporary site obscuring fences shall not be constructed of temporary, blah, 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 blah. That way you get around if they have a permit and the permit's requiring it, They
permit
have
gives you some sort of a guideline. That,
yeah.
That when you have the permit, you have guidelines.
Yeah, because we can put special conditions on permits in most cases. And look at a junkyard where you'd want a fence.
So what does it say? Okay.
Unless authorized by a condition of a permit, permanent or temporary site obscuring fences shall not be constructed.
So do you mind if we reword that?
Yeah, we'll work together.
What permit? Who's gonna do that? You know, that kind of.
I'll work with you on that, Pat. I get the
challenge is the wording before it. It's temporary or portable materials, such as, but not limited to, berms are not portable or temporary structures. So that's our whole lead-in constructed of root balls, temporary. They're going to rot. They could be moved away. Hay bales, junk, all of those other things are all of that substance. But a berm is not.
So create a new that sentence.
I'm advocating that berms not be included in this.
Yeah, pull this out.
Because berms not temporary or portable.
What do we have as far as challenges associated with people
using
berms? I can't think of an example.
A lot of people will just push that dirt up and then leave it, and then the neighbors are complaining. We have one right now where they're complaining the runoff is going onto his property.
So a berm needs to be created and constructed and engineered to be appropriate? Landscaped berm?
Like if you wanted to put a berm at your house.
Let's regulate a.
We don't right now. That's okay. Why that's the problem, because we don't regulate so much. We have to come up with something.
I think you're right, but I don't think it's here.
Okay.
I think when you talk about your temporary, you don't want to confuse.
Pull berms out.
Let's put berms someplace else.
Okay, we'll work on that.
But adding appliances, so that might remove your need for permit type of stuff, because we're not going to ever permit hay bales. Root balls, junk, all of that other stuff, that's not an option. You can't get a permit for it.
Okay. So we'll just do something different with berms when we bring that back.
So we took out unless authorized by permit.
But understanding that
we took that out.
Your point about.
And we'll move berms.
The shade cloth.
We'll move berms out of finances.
Is that okay?
We'll get to shade cloth later.
Okay,
cause
great.
So it's not defined here.
Okay, great.
Yeah, the shade cloth one is one that we had to talk to you about. Number three. What this says is, if you're putting up a vegetative screen, you have to make sure that when mature, it can screen the marijuana plants from the neighbors and that you maintain it. You know, don't just put them in and tell me you're done. You have to make sure they're living. And that's consistent with some of the other conditions that we get from, like, Fish and Wildlife or DSL. Like, if you're doing riparian restoration, you can't just put them in. You got to go back periodically and make sure they're living. So, and again, right now we don't really address it.
Do we have examples of vegetative screens that are not providing the intent?
I don't know if we have cedars here, but I've seen it with cedars. Like, people plant trees and then they plant them to meet the law. And then they don't maintain them. They just let them die off. They just plant little.
There's that fast-growing spruce. I can't remember what it's called. Jim Brumback put them in front of his place. They grow really fast. They're the fastest-growing conifer. And I see that a lot. And it's up in the Willamette Valley buffers and such. But
I can't think of what it's called.
Maintained. I'm not sure it's a problem. I'm not sure. I'm looking for an example of where it is in my head of the roads, and I don't know where I can see that it's not being.
Where a berm would be a problem is when there's runoff. But if it is landscaped with bushes and other stuff like that, if there's a defined thing, that would keep the runoff from happening, would it not? If there's roots and they're holding together?
I think the berm is channeling water in a direction. It's like the water would have come into a ditch. It's all being funneled into someplace else, and they didn't take that into consideration that somewhere else is probably their neighbor's property and causing a problem. But I'm not sure the vegetative one is right.
Is the vegetative screen in place of a fence? Is that saying that some people might want to obscure with
the state? In some cases, the state will allow that as part of their security plan.
Oh,
yeah.
And it has to be
and keep
fast growing enough that it's going to be mature in 3 years.
Right, and what this also says, and this code. So the other thing is, what I found with my staff is we have landscape requirements out there, and so people can go, they have to go and plant stuff. There's nothing in the code that makes you then
maintain it,
make sure it lives. So you can go put, you know, these little free trees you get from Girl Scouts. You could technically go put that along your property line and just walk away. I've met it. I plant my vegetative screen. So that's just another area where trying to address multiple issues. So
what was a requirement on Brimstone on that mining claim that it, that he had to go back and make sure everything lived for the
Oregon State Forest Practices Act requires that. It's right in there.
Yeah.
And so does our.
I don't think it's too much to ask.
Keep going?
Sure.
Okay. Now, four is one that I have to talk to you about because the way we had reviewed it and said to move forward with it is different than how Pat typed it, actually. So
I didn't type it.
Okay, wherever that came from. It's different than... What?
I mean, I might have typed it, but I didn't.
Yeah, so somebody somehow between what we sent over, it got changing, and the intent is different. So I just want to talk to you about that. So the intent of the of these rules were, so what we have are growers with small, maybe they have like 12 plants or 14 plants, and they don't have greenhouses. One, they like the sun-grown marijuana, or they don't have the room for the greenhouses. So in those really hot months, like 3 months out of the year, they spread these shade cloths above the plants to keep the direct sun off of it. And so the concern was, and we've had complaints about some of those, and I've talked to growers, they've explained why they need that, and they're like, we're okay with not having it all year, but we need it at least for 3 months out of the year. And so what we originally said was temporary not to exceed 3 months shade cloths are only allowed in conjunction with a grandfather medical marijuana grow, which we're not going to do, okay. But so it provided the grower can successfully demonstrate shade cloth has been used prior to the date that rendered the site grandfathered to extend the placement of the temporary shade cloth, a waiver can be given. So anyways, what it was doing was saying there's one part about grandfathered, which we don't want to do, is my understanding. But then there's also the thing that the shade cloth is really to protect the plant. The way it was written in here is temporary fencing by using shade cloth. It's talking about putting the shade cloth as a fence. That wasn't the intent. So so I think we need to go back to what the public heard and reviewed at the public hearings was the fact about the cloth above the plant.
All I know is I just saw a shade cloth as a fence in it. In this case, they had done it with class because they had permanent posts in place. They affixed it to the posts in a way that was uniform and
tight.
It wasn't slack. It was bolted in. I'm not talking about the T-posts going up and some cloth around it where it looks hideous. Not like our construction zone either. You know, it's like,
what's the concern of the shade cloth to the neighbors?
Blowing away, leaving, being left up year-round. I think it's more of an aesthetic concern. Or the fact that it could blow away. It's kind of like the tarp.
And I'd only want to do that in like an RR. I wouldn't want to do that everywhere because I can see greenhouses. I have friends who own a nursery up in the Willamette Valley. They have their shade cloth up all year round on the EFU. And, you know, they've got acres of greenhouses and acres of outdoor summer grows. They've got all that permeable cloth on the ground, and they over aggregate, and then they put all of their pots and stuff. So
just so it's not like burning in the sun.
Yeah, and it's all structured and everything.
Temporary shading by use of shade cloth is permitted during a, you'd have to define that period. Temporary shading is allowed for a period of not to exceed 3 months. Now you're not a direct. You can use shade cloth, but you're using it for shading, not fencing. Because we're not addressing fencing there. We're addressing shading. Correct?
Yeah. Temporary shade cloth.
This thing just got turned around into fencing.
What did you just say?
I said temporary shading, take out fencing, by using shade cloth is permitted during the growing season or final phases of growing season, or be defined by the grower, I think, can give you the idea of what.
If you give them 3 months, they'll pick the right 3 months.
And then, then temporary shading is allowed for a period not to exceed 3 months. Okay. When you say temporary shading, then that means they have to take it down. It will be removed after the growing season or something of that sort.
I think that's what happened on this, Julie, is that because it's in the section on fences, walls, and
that's
screens, it could have been Beecher. He started the work on it, and he may have just thought you were talking about fencing.
That makes sense.
And then it never got, you know, those changes never got back to you until too late.
Yep, that makes perfect sense.
But what you really mean is shading the plant.
Okay.
And then it's having their shading must be removed at the end of the growing season. That would answer your neighbor's complaints of, middle of winter time it blew over the fence and got in my irrigation pump or whatever. That would also make it so that every year they're going to take a look at the condition of their shading and upgrade it or fix it or replace it or whatever they need to do.
Maybe we need to make it clear that what you're shading is of the plants. So that's why it was from this first one, I think.
The reason why, just so you understand why it's under the fences, walls, and hedges things is because it's under the, we have no other place to put it. So it's under the fences, walls, and screens.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Screen
mm-hmm.
from, yeah. And it's under a section where we're talking about composition.
Okay. I need 2 minutes to use the restroom. So can we just break for a second? We don't have to formally break.
I'll
just
see what
I'll be right back.
I didn't get all the answers there. But I think it's going to need some work anyway. But I mean, so if you're used to reading the laws and the person that's used to reading the laws is interpreting that to mean that it's a fence, then that's a problem. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
you know, I didn't know anywhere else in the code to put it.
Yeah.
So that's why I looked at the screens part.
Okay. So it just needs to be clear, though, I think.
Yeah, we can.
It can be fixed, yeah.
We'll work on it. I'll take a first crack at everything today, Pat.
Okay.
And then send it over to you to have your input on.
All right. So if you say not to exceed 3 months, does that need to be defined? Like 3 months from the beginning to the end?
Simon made a good point that they're going to know what 3 months that they need it the most.
But it doesn't have to be consecutive.
No.
These are all these things.
I just put 3 months and then let them go for that.
I say we do three consecutive months.
You want to be clear. Do you mean, you can start out in the spring and then middle of the summer you can have another month and then in the end, you know? You need to be clear about
what would be wrong with that from the neighbor's standpoint. I think the neighbor's standpoint is that it goes all winter long and they don't decommission their grow.
I think it just needs to be clear. Do we mean three consecutive months? Or 3 months out of the year, it's just not clear. It doesn't matter to me.
No,
that's a really good point. I think it should say consecutive because the purpose is to prevent the burn off.
I think you're right.
To prevent the what?
The
burn off?
The danger to the plant is for about a 3 month period during its growing cycle. So put three consecutive months, and that should overlap enough. Maybe exactly only 2 months. They're going to go 2 weeks ahead of time.
And they're going to choose when it starts.
They'll choose which month that is. And it really depends on the growing season. Think of a wet winter or a wet summer or a dry summer or whatever, that's going to change all of that.
Yeah.
So leave that up to their discretion. But I'd say, I think consecutive, you're right, let's just put three consecutive months in.
As I'm listening to these things,
making,
I'm thinking how
wait till Simon gets back.
Difficult this is going to be to ever
enforce. They all are. That's why I think consecutive is better because, you know, some of the camping rules, you're just chasing campers. You're chasing deadlines and you don't. Whereas if it's consecutive, hey, if I know it was here April 1st and I know it's still there September 1st, you exceeded your three consecutive
months. And that's your enforcement person saying, I saw it there on that day and you didn't take it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so something like that would be based on somebody complaining.
They have to complain. We only go after them after there's a complaint. Okay.
Simon didn't hear that last part. We decided to go with not to exceed three consecutive months because otherwise it's not real clear.
Sure, that sounds good.
Okay.
Okay, so then we're on erosion control and storm drain facilities, number C, which is page 3 of 4. Regardless of slope, for all land uses in the unincorporated areas of Josephine County. Okay, this is a little different than I... So this one got reworded a little bit too, so I got just... Instances where fill is brought on site or stockpiled and said fill is in excess of 10 cubic yards, provision shall be made to make sure runoff from the fill is maintained at the site. Best management practices to help control runoff shall be implemented, such as but not limited to straw bales or erosion control fabric. Again, this is a big one where we've got all that runoff coming. We have a one guy, I think I've told you, he has 20-some sites he went and cleared and blasted, and he's our poster child of why this needs to be in place. But we have that a lot where people go out there. And I got to be honest with you, it's really, we're not seeing it. The people that come in and get the permits tend to be better players. It's the ones that aren't. But so when they go out there and they totally blast something and you've got the runoff coming down, oh, we just had this with that guy with the same name as a guy that works in the sheriff's office.
Oh, yeah.
Remember him?
Not the beer stove one?
Yeah.
Yes.
Beer stove. The beer stove, which isn't the same beer stove that we have, but same thing.
Do we need to be careful about talking about that?
We had this guy and it just blasted things off.
The record?
And there's just...
It was an executive session topic.
And we have runoff just coming off everywhere. So...
Good point.
Can we... Is somebody going to remember through that and say, okay, I'm just controlling my water, so I pile up a bunch of straw bales that we just said don't use straw bales for...
Well, they have to have more than 10 cubic yards of dirt. And then, yeah, straw bales went...
I think they want you to use straw bales.
For sure, I do.
Okay.
He's concerned it'll be called a fence.
Going back to...
Oh.
Portable fixtures such as not limited to root balls, hay bales.
I see.
Yeah, but then you got to look at fence, you know. So a purpose of a fence would be security or
whatever.
If you
saw that they're controlling erosion with straw bales, you're going to leave them there.
Yeah, how do we arrive at the 10 cubic yards threshold?
Because that's what we have on... I think we have that in another section of the code, or that's consistent maybe with the state law. Again, I can go back and look, Simon. It's been so long.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, these all had justifications. It's
okay.
I'll check into that and just remind myself. Okay, the other part of that is there shall be no filling or grading on slopes as in excess of 15% without a stormwater management plan signed by a registered professional engineer. Where this comes from is we require this on some other things as well, and it is the 15% slope. And when you exceed the 15% slope, we require the stormwater management plan. So,
that's pretty steep, isn't it? 15%?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to be growing... stuff on it. You would create that 15%, is that what you're saying?
No, you would be compensating for the slope. So you'd like cut and fill.
Okay.
And so if you're making an adjustment, there's a place just about a mile from my parents' ranch on a slope that's way in excess of 15%. It's probably 25. I mean, it's like that. And he's cutting and filling and bringing in stuff, and I've heard erosion issues and soil runoff. I mean, most of it's aggregate. It's a loose, soft aggregate that he's cutting into with a huge excavator, and you can hear him up on the hill 2 miles away. It's like, he's really...
You mean they cut into it so it's flat?
So we also, yeah, okay. So we also have a 4 feet total is in our code of cut and fill. That's also in there.
What do you mean 4 feet total?
So if you cut 2 feet into the bank and you're filling 2 feet, in excess of 4 feet cut and fill, you require an engineer. We did that on a road access where there was a cemetery next door, and he was getting pushed in to that threshold of cut and fill in excess of 4 feet. I think the threshold is 4 feet on a 15% grade. Anyway.
Yeah, I've never seen that. But
it's definitely in there. I've done a land use hearing on it. So.
Yeah, I'll look at it just to familiarize.
Yeah, it's just something to be. That makes sense. 15 feet is defensible.
Or the 15%.
15%.
Yeah, because it's consistent with the
berms be incorporated in here somewhere.
We can look at that.
Because we were talking about berms and just that about berms.
Maybe that's where we add it.
we took birds out, excuse me.
Well, we said we'd move it to a different section. We'd figure out where it belongs.
Okay.
So maybe that's where berms grow. I'll look at that.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. Because I don't
know that you can restrict for no runoff. It's that it's mitigated, and it's, you know, the challenges with erosion or something are taken into consideration or something. You can't outright restrict the runoff. That's not what our goal is.
I'll look at how the other section is written.
Yeah, that would be key.
And just make it consistent. I thought that was just kind of a cut and paste, but I'll look at that.
And all waters are the waters of the state, so it goes without saying. So item number, section two.
Section two. So, so now we're into the parking area, okay? So at the current time, the code says any lights provided to illuminate any public or private parking area or vehicle sales area shall be shielded or so arranged as to reflect the light away from any abutting or residential land use. What we want to change it to say is all exterior lighting, including light emitted from security systems, shall be shielded or use a hood and lens that casts light downward so as to ensure no light is cast onto adjacent properties nor upward into the night sky. The lighting mechanism does not utilize a hood or lens. Lighting fixtures shall be fully shielded in such manner that all light emitted directly by the lamp or diffusing element or indirectly by reflection or refraction is projected below the horizontal plane through the lowest light emitting part. Where that came from, we have these parking lot standards, and people are complaining about all the light being emitted, like you guys were saying before. People are just lighting everything up. So this is saying all lighting, it's just got to be cast downward. And the actual language we got came from other marijuana ordinances that are addressing light pollution.
Okay.
I think offhand...
Sounds really thorough.
Yeah, I think offhand it was Deschutes, we took part of it. I'm not sure where else, but that's what we have. So, and then what's in brackets there would be deleted.
Sounds pretty thorough.
Okay. Any problems? All right.
So you're taking out the brackets one, or are you leaving that?
The brackets come on. That's one thing. Question I have with Pat. I'm used to where you cross it out, so everybody knows that's what's going away. And this was typed up with the brackets. I personally think it's easier to read.
It says right above, by deleting the wording contained in brackets and adding the wording underlined. So it tells you right above what you're changing. That was done, again, not me, but Beecher was following the way legislative, when you're doing an ORS, that's how you do it. So.
What we found in, and I don't look at all of our ordinances and codes, but when we've done land use amendments, that we do the strike through and the underline.
Right.
But if we want to switch to that, I'm fine. We just got to make sure everybody understands that's being deleted.
Yeah. I think that, I don't think anybody, it's whatever you want, guys want
to
do.
I think the part in the bracket, the first part, doesn't apply to where we're out in rural America.
Yep. But the question, that's what's on the books now.
We're saying, do you want it, you have to read that with the part above that says we're going to mend it by deleting what's in the brackets. So we're getting rid of the brackets, and everything underlined is new. And what Julie's saying in the past, the way that we've taken care of that would be instead of the brackets, we actually, strike through it. And so if that's more clear, I think once we get the code adopted, they have different ways that they think we should be doing it. This is sort of in the middle of that.
When I've seen them in the past, they're striked through. They're not brackets. But if it's
the way the county has usually done it. So if you want to go back to that, and then eventually we'll adopt maybe some other kind of way to do our ordinances,
I think for the sake of this discussion, it doesn't really matter how it's delineated.
No.
But we do need to keep consistent when we publish this for...
Yeah, we can strike through. We'll just change this wording. And go back to the way we've done this.
So is this meant to just be parking areas?
No.
Then why is it under a section limited to parking areas?
Because we see it in another area.
There's going to be another area twice?
Where we talk about lighting. Yeah,
we talked about it.
But you don't. That wasn't in that first group that you wanted to see, though, I think.
Oh.
This was the first group of easy stuff.
Last night. I threw throat's been real sore.
Too.
Well, that seems to be really well written, I think.
Reword this part here.
So that's what we have for this first.
My next door neighbor's not going to like this, but I'm not really. I mean, our house is a mile away, and you know, from our neighbor. But his lights are the most intense lights I think I've ever seen on a resident. I mean, it's just one box light. And it, you know, the lumens is like a million or whatever. It illuminates his entire front. And then he's got one over on the side. It's really security. He's like, you might make it on, but you're not making off our property. So that's what that tells me.
Put that in brackets.
Right? So his intent is to project that light, not down, but out.
Oh.
and show people we're paying attention so we can see you.
Well, that's a good point, though, because if you can see it,
it is coming onto our property.
Level of how, oh yeah, I can see it a long way off, or I can see it and it's bothering me. It's a difference.
Mm-hmm. I'm not bothered by too much of this stuff. I try to live and let live style.
This is not about what bothers us. This is what bothers our constituents. There's a lot of people complaining about life.
I know.
You guys, the...
It is a major...
I'm just looking... I think I missed a section, or it might be in the other section, but we might want to add it now. So when we originally looked at lighting, we had this parking one, which we just discussed. And then there was another one, amend Article 72, heights, setbacks, and accessory structures, that said lighting, all indoor lighting associated... And it basically... Pretty much... Well, it doesn't repeat it. It just says all indoor lighting associated with an... oh, never mind. We talked about that now.
Yeah, that was
never mind.
Where
is it?
That was
indoor.
Yeah. Okay. So where do we go from now? So part of the issue of the timing is that you already have everything prepared to go for certain ordinance dates. My issue is I'm not here on July 5th for the first date.
That's the proposed... Isn't that a proposed?
Yeah, we haven't got anything.
I'm not going to be here on the 5th either.
Okay, that's a bad day.
I mean,
day,
it's a bad day.
So
I think a lot of people are taking it off as, you know.
We can talk about it. I've got the one thing,
when
we
are
have
you
to have a 10-day notice.
Back?
But we,
the 10th.
Of July?
Mm-hmm.
So, why?
Yeah. What are we at now? I don't even know what to do.
So today's the 20th.
Okay.
So it's 1 week tomorrow, 1 week, the first week of July,
right,
and then I'm back.
Well, there's a holiday in there, so...
There's a holiday in there. The other thing is the very last week of July, I am volunteering at the Wild Family Kids Camp, which is the foster kid camp.
Yeah.
But
so, first reading.
Should we get a temp?
Yes. Yes.
So do you want to discuss this again?
How do we get that job description out? Other duties as assigned. Actually, if it's not Commissioner Morgan, we really don't care about them. If it's a substitute, we'll give them all this fun stuff. We'll send them to things.
They're hiring.
Imagine the things we could do.
What do you want to do today, kids?
So, if it's 2 weeks between each other versus three, my issue is if you put it out a week, I'm gone the last week of July. I'm back the week of the 31st. And I'm here the week of the 10th, I'm here the week of the 17th, and the week of the 31st.
Faster rather than... We're in August at the end of July.
You need a minimum of those
13 days.
You can go 3 weeks.
Okay. So if we did the 12th and the 2nd, I could do that. But what was the purpose of the 5th?
First reading.
Oh, these are in our weekly business session meetings?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And so just so you know, too, there's a notice requirement on these 10-day. So that puts us into, like, tomorrow. As far if we're going to do the 5th. As the first reading, we're 10 days out.
I think
for
we need
right
to revisit
now
these as a draft. She's made a lot of notes.
Yes, I agree.
So
we had first thought if we were going to stick with the 5th, we would bring it back again tomorrow. But if we're going to move down to another date, then we don't have to try to bring it back this week.
Our goal is really to probably not affect too much change this growing season. I mean, people have done stuff. It's really in preparation for next year that people know this is what we're doing when they're applying for the... They got their land use compatibility. Their luck's already. So it's when... Don't they have to apply for that annually?
No. Well, not with us, they don't. But keep in mind, these rules, even if you decided tomorrow you're adopting,
it's 3 months.
There's 90 days before they become effective.
Yeah, we do actually need to get moving on them. And there's portions, and we need to... I didn't get any feedback on the last cannabis advisory draft. That was just the 9 members at large. And the wording was kind of...
draft.
I haven't had a chance either to look through that.
Yeah. You sent
all right,
it
I'll
everybody.
Send it again. Yeah.
I think I did see it. I just haven't had a chance to
Same
look
with
at
me.
It.
I haven't had a chance.
I didn't play with it at all.
It really hasn't changed much.
And I wasn't happy with the wording of some paragraph that we added things in, as y'all had, but I was okay.
Yeah. Well, let's take another look at it.
Maybe what we just need to do is figure out when to do the first and second reading and then go back from there with...
Oh, yeah, we can do all the other timeline. That's no big deal. We just have to know when
let's
you guys
get a
want
final
to do
draft.
First and second.
Well, you can work out with the staff about when we're here. Morgan needs to get her schedule really dialed in and stuff. And we're going to have to work around that. I mean, there could be times when mm-hmm. we're going to move forward and you're not here.
Yep.
So the amount of time is a little bit so that you're not going to be in the office. And I don't want to wait on stuff too much.
I'm okay with that. The 5th.
And you're not going to be here the 5th, so the 5th won't work.
Yeah.
So do we want to do the 12th?
We're hashing it all out ahead of time.
Just realize the 12th is an
evening. She's dialed in on it.
If Commissioner Morgan's not here, I'm not here, why?
So do you wait for the 19th?
Basically, got everybody's stamping.
The 12th is a night meeting. Moving forward, which one you guys are going to be.
Because we have to get the notice to the paper.
Sure.
Yeah.
The 12th is an evening meeting. The 19th is a day meeting.
So if you did the 19th, you could do the 2nd of August. Mm-hmm. As your second reading. Can you tell now, Wendy, if they're available?
August 2nd, yes.
Great.
Okay, so will everybody be here on the 6th? Or do you want to come back in another general? To talk about the changes. Because, let's see, what's today? This is the 20th. We could bring it either back next Thursday, 29th. Would that work? Well, you won't be here.
But they had enough discussion today to see if it meets the spirit of what we're trying to do.
If we email it to you, would you be able to take a look? Okay. Would that work, or do you want it in another general to bring back the changes on next Thursday or next Tuesday?
Tuesday.
27.
Better in general. Okay.
Because we also need to be, I wouldn't mind if we put the, these are non-marijuana. Well, there's marijuana referenced in here and the lighting and everything. It's a nexus of marijuana. I really want to move forward on that RR restriction sooner rather than later. The language should be very simple.
That's what you were sending out yesterday, or somebody was?
I sent out some suggestions.
Yes. Okay.
So we need to review that and get it moving.
Who'd you send it to?
Wally and Simon.
Okay.
I haven't had a chance to take a look at it, but I will. I think it would be a great thing for us to start. Ideally, there's an ability to refine some of this stuff before we bring the full board in here. There are things that they could be working on. You know, if we refine these things and say this is the draft, we've answered a lot of the questions, and then we bring it as a not a final draft, but a draft that's had some vetting.
Restricting growing on RR5.
Yes. I'm just talking about process in general. All of the things that Ms. Schmelzer would like to do should be actually worked out in a draft concept with the liaison and legal, and we can move it forward and then bring it to you as something we've already answered a lot of the questions, or we've found answers to the questions that I've asked, that legal's asked. And that way, when you ask them, we have an answer for you because somebody else already asked that question. And we can move through this stuff, I think, a lot faster if we do it in that kind of a sense. So I'm happy that's my job as the liaison, is to try to work these things out so that when you're coming through it, it looks good. We're much more at that stage, so.
Should we just schedule a meeting with you and Wally and I?
all the time. I think I'd like your list I have in of the things that you want to do and move forward, and then we could sit down and prioritize and say, hey, these are the things that I think we should move forward first, and at the top of that list is the RR restriction, so that that's in place next year, ready to go.
Okay, so you want not just the RR discussion, but all the other stuff.
All the other stuff.
Got it.
And I think that'll serve us well in that process. Mm-hmm. And then some things have to go to the Rural Planning Commission. Some things are actually by resolution requested to the board. They may just come back to us, and we'll get those on parallel tracks, and we'll get some stuff moving. I think that'll be really effective.
I have a question.
Yeah.
On the RR, do you think we can just do that by order?
No. Orders are only for governing elements of the board and the county. Ordinances are the laws. And those are referable to the voters. That's why we ask the non-binding question, anticipating people may want to say, well, I don't know that the county feels that way. I think that if I got a citizen petition, which is the lowest threshold, I could overrule the board's proposed ordinance. That's what that 90 days is for.
Sure.
And so this is an ordinance element. And but I don't expect people...
Basically, you don't have any teeth if it's an order.
Yeah, I don't expect anybody to do that because we've got a fairly definitive decision by the voters on a vote. I don't want it held up for implementation next growing season because people may think that it could be challenged. Well, it's pretty definitive that the voters already spoke on that issue. And so it has to be a standalone ordinance that just governs a prohibition of RR on commercial, OLCC regulated, on RR. Does that make sense? Cool. I think we'll get that in the queue as well. I don't know that I wouldn't mind putting it into this package. It should be your draft, fairly simple. And
so you're thinking maybe put it in this one?
I would like to have it in this package.
Even the same ordinance?
No. It has to be a different ordinance. It has to be completely separate.
So what, oh, you mean so they run at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we want to add a public hearing on it.
We don't have to.
Those public
hearings are
not required.
No, it's okay. We'll get those first two.
The first reading is the public hearing. And the second
I'm
reading.
Just thinking DLCD.
No.
Department of Land Conservation Development and their requirements.
You mean... they
require,
like
when we started this whole process, I had to give it to them. Their law says you have to give it to them 35 days before the first public hearing, et cetera.
Show me what that is.
Yeah, I don't know about that. We didn't do that with the solid waste ones. We didn't even let them know.
No.
Not up to them.
Well, and that's why I asked about the order, too, because I know you've done stuff by order that we now enforce as code. Which I've never done. I'm not used to orders, so I'm always surprised about how we can do it.
What you're talking about, the order, you're talking about that
clarifying.
We've done that as just a.
That's an internal. That's how policy should be done.
Yeah.
If you have a policy and you don't have it backed up by direction of the board, codified in order, you don't have a leg to stand on any of those things. But you can ask us and say, "What did you guys expect for industrial purposes where marijuana?" Should or could be grown. And so that question was asked by your predecessor, and we clarified. Yeah, we see it based on the code as being consistent as permitted use on industrial, whatever that order said. And that's just giving you clarification of a policy direction of the board, but that's only for internal stuff.
Okay, I'll have to show you some examples because there's some that are a little different. And then we had the question with this one too. Remember there was the Williams thing? And I remember in February, the board had decided to send the Williams one forward as an order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We can draft an order to tell you to pursue it, codified in ordinance, make an addition to the code. That would have been like a resolution kind of does that?
Yes, the resolution. We did it with this one.
Uh-huh.
We did it with something else.
It's providing direction. Orders, so I'm sure you know this, but proclamations, resolutions, orders, ordinances. And orders are internal clarifying of procedures, policies of the county. They're not laws.
Yeah, and see, that was my understanding, but I know we have, I'll have to find them.
Yeah.
Our Rural Land Development Code has several amendments, several of which are orders. So I'll send them out just a
code
amendment by order.
That's what
I would like to see that because that's not right.
And there's several in there in that book. That
well, you can't amend an ordinance by an order.
No.
And that's so. Yeah. Okay. This is all before I got here.
Yeah.
I just know I'm looking at the book of amendments and I'm like. Like half of them, I think, are orders, and I'm like, how
that's
are we doing
legal.
This?
I don't know how. It was.
We shouldn't
and
be
maybe
enforcing
they were
that.
Maybe they were just orders, and they should have never been put in the code. But I know that on our website and everything, they have them advertised as amendments to the code. I'll look at them. I'll send it out to everybody.
Well, and I had one like that. Said I got confronted by a contractor a week ago. I was waiting for some dinner, and. Was upset that going in to deal with our department that they have to wait behind a marijuana person sitting there asking every question of how to do anything else. And they're like, you guys need to have staff for just marijuana that just deals with them. And then you need to have staff for those of us that are normal contractors so we can get through our business and get going. And he said,
needed planning.
Yeah. And he said, let's charge them fees to justify the staff and pay for itself. But let us have our normal things so we can get our normal business done. And I asked, I said, hey, we got our electronic, we approved going to electronic e-permitting and stuff like that. Have you tried these steps yet? And, you know, various things. But it was just one of those things that in the conversation of it. But one of the questions was that we are requiring people to deed their property for secondary buildings that to promise they won't be residences ever. So he built a shop with a kitchen in it. And
you can't have a kitchen in a shop. It qualifies as it meets the definition of a dwelling, and per Oregon law, you can only have one dwelling per property.
Okay. So they said the solution was they had to lien the property.
No.
That's what planning said, is lien the property to guarantee it can never be used as a residence if you want this to be a shop.
Okay. So what there is deed restrictions. There's deed restrictions.
Okay.
And that is under the direction of DLCD saying, you know, because they're the ones that actually have the law about the, or I shouldn't say we have it too, about the one dwelling per lot. But sometimes you should never run into a situation where somebody needs a kitchen in their shop. But sometimes you will run into it where they need a full bath in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so DLCD's... direction to us is to do that as a deed restriction, and we've done that before. I guess forever we've done that. The other thing is we run into the medical hardship, which is something I'll bring back to you sometime, which is a totally fraudulent program. Like 90% of it is fraud, but there are some that really need that program. Those require deed restrictions as well, saying when they're done with that hardship, they're going to convert this house back to a garage or whatever. Rarely happens. We've got a long list of them that need to go through legal on that. I actually have a newspaper article of this story on this beautiful renovation, and my God, it is beautiful. But it was based on a temporary hardship, meaning when the hardship was done, they had to remove the kitchen, the bath, and all this other stuff. It's never going to happen. When you put $200,000 into a renovation, it's not going to happen. We were hopeful. The state was looking at ADU accessory dwelling unit regulations. We were very hopeful that those would pass because hopefully then we could get rid of the hardship program and hopefully we could just start dealing with these illegal conversions and just calling them an ADU and, hey, life is legitimate and good. But that failed at the state.
I think we should implement something locally to accommodate that. I really don't care about these ADUs of a kitchen and a shop. So what if the guy wants to make a grilled cheese while he's working, you know? So what?
The city of Portland
has
it.
He's got
they allow ADUs in the
all
city.
Of this
the
welders and gas tanks and stuff like that, and you won't let him have a hot plate and a sink?
Has to be
that's ridiculous.
Distance. Not
I mean, the code is so silly.
It is.
You should have a sink and running water somewhere because if you get something in your eyes, what they say, irrigate, you know, water in your eyes. Now, I'm not allowed to have a sink out here.
Yeah. And if you want to warm up your coffee in a microwave or, you know, it just seems.
Or if your wife throws you out, you want to go out and live out in the shop.
Yeah.
Since I've been here, they adopted that.
I don't like that portion of our code at all. And it is such a.
But I think that's what probably. The public pushes back on this stuff just like that.
It doesn't make any sense.
Anyway, so that's a topic for a whole nother day.
I wouldn't mind having that discussion about pursuing an ADU element of our code locally. And okay. I don't care what the state.
Well, we certainly have a need for housing.
Yeah.
I mean, here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the city just changed and had a little house on, you know, to take care of your parents or whatever.
So should we schedule a discussion on that right away?
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Can we have your calendar back, Pat?
Well, whenever. We'll work that out. What I'd like to see is some model code that we could adopt locally. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to wait for the legislature to figure it out. They rarely figure it out very well anyway. And so maybe we'll be looked at as a model of what a county ought to be able to be. Because right now, I don't really want us regulating that much, too much, you know. Health, safety, we get mired down in these challenges where people are doing stuff and the code is not caught up. It's not keeping up with what people want to do.
Well, we have a housing crisis, and we're not able to meet the demands of it.
Yeah. And let the private sector work that out. People could put these things on their properties tomorrow, have them permitted, have them, you know, inspected in a very safe way. And that would be solved overnight, before the end of the year.
We could look at the cities. We could look at Portland.
Commissioner Young?
I would like to see, because we have such a housing shortage, I would like to see a section or a requirement for shelter. Just shelter. Rather than say, no, shelter means a three-bedroom, two-bath house with R58 in the ceiling and U19 windows or U2 windows, all of these requirements, energy requirements and stuff, and that's why we have people out here that are homeless. We don't have any. You can't build a rental anymore because it's not considered shelter. It has to be state-of-the-art. People can't afford state-of-the-art. I know energy codes and everything they're meant for a purpose. But, you know, when you got people sleeping out in the street and everything because you can't provide them with shelter, let's get something, see if we can do something with two or four walls again, roll-in insulation, sheetrock, and very minimal lighting in it, and a baseboard heater in one corner, or a cadet heater in it, so that it's just shelter, so the guy's got a place to go or his little family has a place to go.
I'll have to figure out through the building code, because what prevents us from
the
doing that...
The building code is not going to... will tell you can't do it. But that's what I'm saying. I think there should be a category right now for shelter. And it's just basic shelter. It has a whole different set of rules than if you want to build the Peterman's house down on the river, you know, which he wants all the fancy stuff. He can afford it. But a girl working, a single mom working out here at Winco, she can't.
Yeah.
And she's not allowed to build anything to put a roof over her head. So she's now becomes at mercy of the rental market. And they're getting to her.
Which, by the way, the new girl we hired still cannot find a place to live.
What?
Windermere came to our Rotary a couple weeks ago. He was their national economist for Windermere. Said that Grants Pass, Josephine County needs to be building 1,200 housing a year to keep up with our demand right now. And permits with less than 400.
Ex-secretary out of bought a house in Myrtle Creek, so she's going to be vacating a place up by Lincoln School. Pepperwood or whatever it is goes right up off of Lincoln School.
I'll contact you.
I'll see if I can get you an address and a contact.
Okay.
It's a nice three-bedroom rent out home.
Where's she
living? She's going to stay with friends.
Anything else we need to discuss here? So we've got an agenda.
I am going to be...
Are you with us this afternoon? Or no?
I think I need to come back. I was not going to, but I think looking at the agenda, I also sent you guys just an email from AMR regarding that topic. It was a concern of mine. I come across a letter in the folder that I just was concerned that we didn't know about it.
We have that. Is that on our agenda?
It is.
Yes.
So one other thing is I'm going to be having a conference call with AOC this week to discuss some public health issues.
Okay.
I've also received a couple of requests to have us review some things there. So soon I'll get legal to get some things on the agenda, but just want to kind of give you a heads up. Our district attorney has made a formal request to have some things changed. And I don't know how much to say now versus when we bring it back in the agenda. But essentially, looking at potentially.
Mercy flights. I don't see anything on here regarding public health and executive sessions.
No, you just asked if there's anything else. I'm just giving you an update.
No, I know. I don't know when we talk about it otherwise. We've got mercy flights, but that's in public session, so it's really no different than now.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Got it.
Yeah. I don't have the letter with me.
We're not going to afford you today an opportunity to talk in executive session on...
No. Okay, I just want you to have a heads up it's coming. Cool. I'm just letting you know that I'm seeking out resources and help first, and then going to be coming back with some recommendations and some discussion.
Okay.
So, just wanted you guys not to be surprised if I bring up the health department as a topic of needing some assistance.
Great. Anything, Commissioner DeYoung? See you all at 2 o'clock. If nothing further, the board's adjourned at 11:20.